Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's very special episode in which we program 31 days of our own repertory theater. I am joined for this very special pre-holiday episode by Adam Risky.
Hello everyone.
Happy 8th night of Hanukkah, sir.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm happy for you. Is this the night that you watch Eight Crazy Nights, or did you bust that out on night one?
No, I haven't watched it yet.
Are you going to watch it?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'll watch it at our repertory theater.
Are you going
to
wait till 2019 for the Lifetime movies?
Yeah. So what Patrick is referring to is that there was like a news article about a week ago that said that Hallmark got the memo. And that Jewish people also watched Hallmark Channel, and we would love...
Oh, it's Hallmark, not Lifetime, I'm sorry.
I think it was Hallmark. I'm not even sure anymore. It might have been Lifetime. We would love to have a movie that's not The Hebrew Hammer or Eight Crazy Nights.
Right.
We would like to have something with Lacey Chabert. So let's hope.
I like that they announced it a year out like they're Marvel.
Yes.
Just laying those release dates down.
I have a working title that I will, if Hallmark is listening, I will write a spec script for free if you use this movie's title and you air a movie with this title.
Okay.
It's basically just note for note a remake of A Star Is Born, but it's called In the Shalom.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad at
it's
all.
Just, they're just Jewish. That's it.
What if A Star Is Born, except Jewish?
A Jewish star? And the star's name is
the
David.
The Star of David is born.
Yeah. His name is David D. David.
So, you know, a bunch of things have happened. The New Beverly Cinema reopened in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Where we have both gone and wish we could go more.
Yeah. Have you been the one time?
Just the one time.
What did you see when you were there?
Young Dillinger.
Okay.
Which it was the second movie on a double bill with Public Enemies, a movie I don't much like.
I want to talk to you about Public Enemies for a hot second.
Okay.
The Paramount Theater, which is what, Aurora, I think? Okay. So they sent me an email because I went to one show there, so I'm on their list. And they said, auction for the chair that Johnny Depp sat in Public Enemies, and it went for $3,500.
Wow.
And it's just like a dirty old theater chair. And I was texting with Rob. I'm like, why would you do that in 2018?
Yeah, right.
Like, why would you wait that long when, like, there's couldn't be less heat
right.
on
yeah, right.
Public Enemies or Johnny
or
Depp?
Or Johnny Depp. I don't know. Crimes of Grindelwald is really...
We'll get to Crimes of
Grindelwald. Oh, wow. Wow, we will? Oh, yeah. Man. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the New Beverly is also now the sponsor of one of our very favorite podcasts, the Pure Cinema Podcast, hosted by friends of the show, Brian Sauer and Elwer Kane, both of whom have been on in the past and are two of my favorite movie fans. And so they did a show recently with Phil Blankenship where they just talked through the New Beverly calendar for the month.
It's a fantastic show, and it makes you want to watch every
It makes you want to watch every episode makes me want to watch every movie that they talk about, whether I've seen it or not. But yes, for sure, this one was like, well, I've never seen that. I've never even heard of that. How do I find this movie? And then every time they're like, it's kind of hard to find. I'm like, God damn it.
Yeah. And I put my money where my mouth is on this one.
Yeah, you did.
I have been following along at home.
Yeah.
All the way in Illinois in my living room, which is my makeshift New Beverly.
Right.
I haven't done the trailers or like any of the shorts because I don't want to get too cute for an audience of one. Because it's just like, ooh, what a surprise. I didn't know they'd show this trailer curated by me. But I have watched a few things. I'll talk about it.
Okay.
It's been fun revisiting some of the stuff I've revisited. It's one of those great circumstances where it's like, wow, I really love this movie. And then you watch it again and you're like, I love it even more.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this. Yeah. Okay. This is awesome.
And some good new stuff too.
So, Adam had the suggestion that maybe we were talking about ideas for the holiday show that's coming up. And he said, well, what if we each program, you know, basically a version of the New Beverly and we go through our whole calendar. And I said, well, that's awesome. But I also love this other idea that you had for a holiday show. So let's do both, and we'll do this one ahead of time. So our holiday show will be out in about 2 weeks. But in the meantime, we're doing this very special calendar episode. So we're going to program our own movie theater for a month, and we're going to talk through our calendars. But of course, before we get to that, Adam Risky, have you seen anything good lately?
Yeah, I'm going to barrel through these because we've we've got 124 movies to talk about.
God.
Yeah, so buckle up. I went to the theaters a bunch of times this weekend. I saw Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Look, we did get to it. You were right.
Yeah, I didn't want to see it. But
did you see the first Fantastic Beasts?
Yeah, and I hated it.
I haven't seen either one.
It's The Hobbit and Phantom Menace. It's just one of those.
Those are two movies I'm not crazy about.
Yeah, no. It's no mortal endings.
If you said, I will give you $1,000 if you could tell me the name of that movie coming out that Peter Jackson produced, I would be out $1,000.
Oh, wow.
I can never think of the name of that movie.
Well, now you know it. So when that person comes along with the $1,000
bet. Where is
that
person?
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway.
Yeah. I think he's at Dollar Tree. He's just like, there's 1,000 things you can buy in here right now. One of my friends wanted to see it, and it was like one of those things. It's like, well, what haven't you seen? And I said, like, well, I've seen these 6 things playing at this theater showing 7. And he's like, well, why don't we go see the 7th one? So
that's how I end up seeing The Real McCoy.
Yeah. So I fell asleep for the first 30 minutes of the movie. Mm. The opening scene, there's Johnny Depp like escaping on a carriage, and I fell asleep. And I woke up because there was a laugh in the audience, and I looked at my phone, and I'm like, I was asleep for 30 solid minutes, and then I stayed awake for the rest of it.
Okay.
And it's better than the first one, but that's like the lowest bar low bars. It's just the thing that drives me nuts about this franchise is right from the beginning, don't they want to sell any merchandise? Like, don't you want to have any fun whatsoever? You could have done anything you wanted in this universe, in this wizarding world, if you will. And I'm sorry, I guess if you want to have any fun in this wizarding world, you had to go to Universal Studios because you're not going to get it in any of these movies. And it's such a drag and everybody's sad. And like, they try to just do like these one for ones with like, oh, Grindelwald is like having rallies and stuff. And it's just like, come on, we have enough of this elsewhere. Why can't the movie about wizards be enjoyable? So I did not like that. I saw Instant Family with Mark Wahlberg.
Matt Singer had that on his honorable mentions for the best movies of the year.
Okay.
And he didn't write it up at all. It was just like, here's his top 10,
yeah,
and then underneath, like, here's some other movies.
Yeah.
And Instant Family was on there, and without any context and without any write-up, I couldn't tell if he was being sarcastic.
I don't think he is.
Okay.
It's way better than I thought it would be.
How is that possible?
I was worried at the beginning because it's edited in a way that it feels like just, it's like whiplash. There's just so much going on. It's like just weird jokes, and it's like that bad comedy editing and stuff. But then it kind of settles in, and it's really sweet, and they have some conversations in the movie that are, it's like one of those movies where they throw so much, like just in terms of pulling at the heartstrings moments and jokes where some of it sticks. And when it is funny, it's like really funny, like surprisingly funny. And it's stuff that's a lot of character things. Like Rose Byrne has,
she's great,
like a lot of asides that are really funny, like where she'll be hugging somebody and then like basically saying something that like the audience is thinking,
right,
but like it was, and it's something like a person would say, but it would be wildly inappropriate for them to say. And it's funny, and it's sweet. It's like a sweet movie. So I give them credit, the people who made it, that they tried, and the effort shows, and it's a nice holiday movie to see. So I wouldn't put it like in my favorites list or honorable mentions or anything like that, but I can, it's the type of movie where I can completely understand why if somebody said it's one of my favorite movies of the year, I would get it.
It just so surprised me because it really looked like, what was the Billy Crystal, Bette Midler, We're Babysitting Our Grandkids movie?
Parental Guidance.
It looked like Parental Guidance.
Yeah. Yes, it did. Yeah.
Does Wahlberg redeem himself after 47 Blocks, whatever the hell that movie was called. What was that movie called?
Mile 22.
Mile 22.
We'll go 47 Blocks.
Which is part 47 meters down and part 16 blocks.
Yeah. So, Mile 22.
That's how that title came into my head.
I think it's Mile 22 Has Fallen. I think so. He's got some... He's appealing, and he's got some moments that are funny. He has a conversation in the movie where he's asking, Tig Notaro and Octavia Spencer are the two women who are the representatives that work with him and Rose Byrne from the foster care slash adoption agency. And there's like a funny scene where he's like talking about how he's worried that because they're fostering three Hispanic children, that people will think that they're white saviors and make fun of them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then they're just like, oh, well, we'll just write whites only on your form. And he's like, no, that's not what I mean. And then the way he explains himself is like, he's just like, I just don't want to be like that guy in Avatar who goes in and becomes the best blue person. And then they're just like looking at him. And then he's like, what? I had to ask the Avatar question. It's stuff like that. I thought it was funny. Anyways,
keep the word Avatar out of your mouth, Mark Wahlberg.
Whoa, shots fired. Speaking of shots fired.
I see you, bro. I see you. Meet me over at Home Tree, bro. All right, sorry.
He should be careful. He might end up in one of these movies. There's five of them. He might be in the fourth and fifth one.
Do you think he might be in
Transformer style?
The seed bearer? Do you think he might be the seed? I'm the seed bearer, bro.
It's going to play out like the Transformers movies.
I think we just found Pandora.
God, dude, he's going to become the seed bearer now because in Transformers, he ended up being the last knight.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, my God. He will be the seed bearer.
And you know we have a power of putting things out in the universe and then happening.
That's true.
Thanks, Hobbs and Shaw. I take the ding on that one. And then I saw The Favorite.
Okay.
And I
saw that as well.
I never loved it. I liked it. And in the drive home afterwards, I thought it was very interesting and it made me think for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy I saw it. It's good. I don't think it'll be... I mean, obviously, I'm saying this because it's that time of year.
Right.
It's not like going to make my list
right.
or anything. But I thought the performances were good and I kind of just have a weakness for movies of that time period
sure.
and like I like the politics behind the scenes of like the aristocrats and like the everything.
I was reminded a lot of Barry Lyndon the whole time I was watching it.
For sure, like the aesthetic.
And yeah, which I liked. I mean, that was some of my favorite stuff. Like you said, the performances were interesting. There's a sense of humor about it that I thought was interesting, but like all of his movies that I've seen so far, and I still haven't seen Dogtooth.
I haven't seen that either.
It's like 50 to 75% of it, I'm there. Mm-hmm. But then there's something holding me back from just really loving it. But there's enough to like that I think, okay, he's an interesting filmmaker. I'll continue to see all of his movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I have yet to really fall for one. And this, I mean, people are kind of falling all over themselves for The Favorite.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was good. I mean, like, I think that if it's, you know, you want to see it, go see it.
Oh, absolutely.
It's definitely, like, not bad or anything. I liked, Rachel Weisz is always good.
She is. Olivia Colman is getting so much attention for the movie.
Yeah, I think it's flashy, kind of.
I think Rachel Weisz gives the best performance in the movie.
I think so, too. What do you think of Emma Stone in it?
I thought she was fine. I mean, I wasn't, like, blown away by her, but I wasn't distracted or anything.
I thought it was good. Like, it was interesting that she used kind of what she's famous for, mm-hmm. like just her charm, but
sure.
in a
right.
it's like a Sudeikis colossal type thing where she kind
right.
of flips it a little bit,
right.
It puts to different use. So I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And then because of the New Beverly reopening and releasing their schedule, I've watched a ton of stuff. So like I revisited, I had big bumps for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I watched that a second time and that movie's perfect.
Even with your Robert Redford allergy.
I can get over it
okay,
for this
good.
One.
Good, good.
I might go to The Sting again.
Interesting.
Just to try it out.
The Sting's really good.
Yeah. But I love with that movie how it's all fun and games, and then there's that conversation
right.
where he's just like, oh, no, you're going to die. Like, this is how it's going to end.
Yeah.
It, like, how else did you think it was going to end? And then the rest of it is that inevitable,
mm-hmm.
and I love it. It's so good, and the music in it is mm-hmm. like so great.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why I'm talking about it now because it's on my calendar. and I saw I Dazed and Confused is even better than I remember. I love that movie.
That movie's amazing.
That movie's incredible. It's also on my calendar. I don't know what I'm talking about right now. I don't know. This was a weird thing because I think I started reading more about the men who the movie Goodfellas is based off of.
Okay.
And when I was starting to read like more about the Tommy character that Joe Pesci plays, it was like horrifying, even more so than how he is in the movie. And I think having that in my brain watching it this time, or rewatching it this time, it made the movie different in a slight way. Like, it's even better to me now. I always loved it. It's like, but now I think it's like maybe one of my 5 favorite movies. It's just that these men
are honing in on Mike's territory.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Mike, it's all, still your numero uno, and I know Erica loves it even more than I do.
Especially the soundtrack.
Yes. Yes. But this was the first time where whatever any type of romanticism of it is gone for me, where I'm just like, these guys are animals. Like, it's just...
Even that first, like, hour?
It's just, I know kind of what they are.
Okay.
So, like, I think that...
That's the mystique, greatness of that movie,
for
though,
sure.
Is, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the mystique of it is just, I'm like, okay, it's like this big illusion. So it's great. And then I rewatched, or I watched for the first time, Family Enforcer, which is a 70s grindhouse mob movie. And its claim to fame is that it was the movie that Joe Pesci and Frank Vincent did that got them noticed by Robert De Niro, who then recommended them to Martin Scorsese for Raging Bull.
Right.
And it's really good. I mean, like, I was very entertained by it, and it's very, like, idiosyncratic and interesting, and Pesci's just, like, immediately great. So I really liked that, and I really liked Butch and Sundance, the early days. I can't remember if it's early days or early
years. I think it's early days. I always want to call it early years, but I think it's early days.
Yeah.
Both of these are on the current New Beverly. Oh, all of these are on the New Beverly calendar. Like, you already said that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So that one was really surprisingly good, because I think I always thought, even if I don't know if I even knew about it until recently, but I thought it was going to be like TV movie. Butch and Sundance.
That's what I always thought it was a TV movie until I heard them talking about it, and they said Richard Lester directed it, and I was so surprised by that, because I truly thought it was like a TV movie prequel.
Yeah, and I mean, William Cadd and Tom Berenger are great.
I really like both of them.
They're really, really good in it. I've become like a pretty, just recently, like a big William Cadd fan because of that rewatch of Carrie.
Yes, he's
recently,
so good
in that. He's so great in this. And then it's one of those awesome movies where it's just littered with people that you know. And there's like Brian Dennehy and Christopher Lloyd, and like wherever you look, there's like somebody that you've seen in something and you recognize. And I would definitely recommend it. It's kind of hard to find, but if you can.
Worth a blind buy?
I think so, depending on the price. Like, if
it's 20... $8 for 4 movies.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
it's
for
It's a Blu-ray of 4 movies. That's one of them, and the Blu-ray's like $8 or $9.
Do you remember what else is on the Blu-ray?
3 other Westerns.
Okay.
I think it's just 3 different cuts of Bad Girls.
I need to see that still. No, I would in a heartbeat buy it for $8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good to know. Good.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No.
I'll try to talk quickly. I have been seeing a lot of the big awards bait movies because it is screener season, and we had to vote for the Chicago Film Critics Awards this week. Roma took most of the awards. So I saw that.
Yeah.
And that is the new Alfonso Cuarón movie that will be on Netflix maybe by the time this comes out. When is...
I think Friday.
Okay, so this week it comes out.
It's in some theaters now.
Yeah. And honestly, it probably deserves to be seen theatrically.
Yeah.
But if all you can watch it on is Netflix, you absolutely should. It's very good.
Okay.
He's a very good director. Yeah. it's very beautiful.
What would you compare it to?
I don't even know, because it feels more like neorealism than anything, like Italian neorealism than anything I've seen him do.
Like Fellini type stuff? Like Armored?
I've never seen Armored.
Good.
Is that neorealism? I'm thinking more like Bicycle Thieves.
Oh, okay.
Like,
all right.
It's very just kind of slice of life. Here is this woman who works as kind of a housekeeper slash nanny for this wealthy family, and here's her life for a period of time.
Yeah.
And, It's really good.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I saw Destroyer.
Okay.
Which I really wanted to love because it's Karin Kusama, and I'm always rooting for her because I just think she's not only a talented filmmaker, but just cool. Like, you know, you hear her interviewed and you're just, you're somebody that you want her to succeed. And so this seemed like kind of a big jump to maybe something more mainstream after The Invitation, which I really liked. I know you're more mixed on it, but I wanted to love it. It's a good Nicole Kidman performance in a, inside of a movie that's good, but very familiar.
Okay.
Very familiar. And the makeup is, if you've seen the trailer, Nicole Kidman is under a lot of makeup to make her appear sort of as haggard as possible. And there's just so many shots where it just, it truly looks like a Halloween costume. So I was distracted by that. Really good performance. Interesting enough story, but just so many of the beats that it hit, I was like, oh, I've seen this movie a lot of times. Sort of the dirty cop movie, you know. Worth seeing, but not the movie that I really wanted it to be, I guess.
So it's no Malice.
No. Malice came very close to being programmed here, by the way. I was going to do a Bill Pullman double, but
I had a Nicole Kidman double of Malice and To Die For, but it didn't make
that. Would be a terrific double feature.
It would be. It was my femme for Kidman's.
The only other one I'll talk about, because we talked about The Favorite, and I'll talk about two more.
Yeah.
Because a lot of what we've been watching still, well, Erica and I have been watching all these screeners, and then we're going to get back to watching like old movies. But
did you see the exclusive preview of Bumblebee?
We did not.
Did you see the exclusive preview of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse?
No, and I could have and didn't. That was Charlie's party that day.
Oh, okay.
But that won Best Animated Film at the Chicago Film Critics Awards.
See, that's the thing. Like, I want to see it more now than I did before, but when I hear all these positive reviews about Spider-Man and Aquaman and Bumblebee, I'm like,
I haven't heard any positives about Aquaman and Bumblebee, but I'm very out of the loop.
Okay.
But just like, the word is good.
The word is more positive than bad.
Very
for
surprising.
Sure. And I'm just like, I don't believe you ever anymore, internet.
I saw mid-90s, which I really did not like.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of it.
No, and you kind of prepared me for it, but...
Yeah. Oh, it's very douche bro.
It's amazingly pretentious.
Yeah.
Like, even his decision to shoot it in that aspect ratio, I'm just like, how can you justify this?
I burst out laughing in the first couple of minutes. I was watching it in a theater, and it was like this medley of, like, it was like, I forgot what song they were playing right at the beginning, but it was like the most 90s song ever.
Right.
And then you see like kids on the street and like one kid's wearing a Ren and Stimpy shirt.
Oh,
and I'm just like, is this what the whole movie's going to be?
Also, this wasn't Jonah Hill's experience in the mid 90s, right?
Supposedly he was a skater.
Okay.
I don't know.
I just have a hard time.
It's one of those movies that I just don't. Like, we're supposed to see the poetry of it all, and I'm just like, these kids could be nicer.
Yeah. No, like, I was not a fan.
Yeah.
I saw Vice.
Oh, yeah.
Which I found incredibly frustrating. I wish Adam McKay would go back to making comedies. He clearly is very passionate about politics, but doesn't seem to have much to say. The Big Short and Vice have a lot in common in terms of their tone and sort of it's sort of this acidic comedy, but there aren't really any jokes in Vice. There's one thing, and I'm not going to spoil it, obviously, but he does one great thing sort of cinematically about halfway through the movie. It's a great joke, and then that's it for the movie. Most of it is actors in makeup doing impressions of famous historical figures / politicians. It tells us nothing we didn't know about Dick Cheney. It has no real point of view. It's basically just, and then Dick Cheney did this, and then Dick Cheney did this. And so much of it we've already learned.
Yeah.
So it has no, it's a movie with almost nothing to say, except it says, like, Dick Cheney was actually the architect behind the Bush administration. Well, no kidding. We were there. We lived through it. None of us didn't know that. So, hey, cool. I mean, the makeup job is impressive. Christian Bale certainly is doing a voice, but like, and I'm not lending any credence to the Golden Globes, but to see that he gets nominated for a Golden Globe for that is insane, because it's like nominating someone for an SNL sketch.
Yeah. No, I always get disappointed when I hear a biopic doesn't either have like the filmmaker's point of view about that person, or they're using that person's life to address some kind of larger theme, like Raging Bull or something like that.
Right.
Like, then it's a story worth telling.
Right.
But otherwise, what the hell are you doing?
And then the last one I'll talk about is If Beale Street Could Talk.
Yeah, I want to see that.
Which is very good, very romantic. I'm excited for you to see it.
Yeah.
Because you were such a fan of Moonlight. And This movie is also definitely one of the best love stories of the year, I think.
I'm excited to see it. Moonlight's something I want to revisit too, because I only saw it the one time. And I remember it was like my second favorite movie that year, mm-hmm. but then it got lost in the whole like bullshit with the La La Land thing. And just because that was my favorite movie of the year, I felt like the universe was like, you have to pick sides. And I was never like anti-Moonlight, but at the same time, I was like, so stop bullying La La Land. Mm. It makes people happy. What is your problem?
Well, guess what? Your white privilege is showing.
Oh, hold on. Let me cover it up.
It's fascinating because, again, I watched a lot of these with Erica, and I'm in the process of sort of trying to figure out what my top 10 list might be.
Yeah.
And she has kind of, we've been talking about it, and she has three that might be in the running for her number one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting because I've seen all three. I like all three. None of them are in the running for my number one.
Okay.
But I think her list is so much more interesting than mine. I'm like, well, I could just copy it and do what she's doing.
Okay.
I'm never going to do that. But
after the show, I want to hear these.
I'm excited for lists. Yeah.
Okay.
You've only seen one of them so far. But
okay. All right.
And weren't crazy about it, I believe.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I'll tell you after the show.
Yeah.
Let's get to... Oh, go ahead.
If we're talking awards, what do you think would win this year for Best Woke Ensemble? That's at the SAGs, I believe.
I don't know. I can't even think of like the movie to make the joke about.
No.
I don't know.
No, I don't know either. It's probably best that you don't make
the joke. Yeah, well, obviously. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's get to our calendars.
Let's do it.
So we're going to do 31 days in December, 31 days of double features. The one stipulation that we had was the week of Christmas, we're doing all Christmas movies.
Yeah, so the 19th through the 25th are all Christmas movies.
Okay.
Right now, on the day of this recording, it is Sunday the 9th, so you have missed 8 days.
Shoot.
So I apologize to all of you for missing these double features.
Yeah, you can play catch up, though.
At our theater. But it's okay because, like, the Sprite machine wasn't good. Like, the syrup was bad for three of those days.
Oh, wow.
For three of those days. It was a nightmare.
Go ahead and go first. We're just going to bounce back and forth day one, day two.
Okay.
And once again, we should give credit to, I think, Pure Cinema.
Absolutely.
For this basically stealing this idea.
Yeah,
so thank you guys.
Yeah, exactly. This was something that I think, because it was a natural progression from our Friday night double features.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
This was bound to happen.
Right.
And there was a tweet once where it was like, you own a rep theater. What are the three things that you would show that weekend?
How are you supposed to choose three?
Yeah, and then I remember I named two movies, and then for the third one I said, like, closed for company outing.
Chances are we're going to do this again,
yeah,
because I know both of us have been
sort of agonizing
over this,
yeah,
and there are some that I'm just not happy with, and so I know I'm going to want to revisit it when I'm like, oh, I should have done this double feature.
Yeah.
So we'll
like,
put it
you'll
aside.
Name something, I'll get an idea, and then I'll be tortured over
it. So we'll probably do this again.
Yeah. So Saturday, December 1st.
Night one, baby.
Night one was a double feature of Pretty Woman and Vivre C'est Vie.
Interesting.
My Life to Live. So it's the sex worker double.
Yeah, it is.
With two very different
takes. Talk about leaving on a down note, dude.
But that last shot is amazing, and I want people walking out and talking about it and then maybe looking for a sex worker.
I mean, I applaud your social consciousness, because I think if you had flipped it, I think you're really doing a sales pitch for prostitution, which I'm not even saying you're wrong to be a prostitute or a sex worker.
No.
I'm not judging those things.
Right.
But I definitely think it's like, see, it's not all bad.
No. But I love these two movies in very different ways.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty Woman is...
Oh, I'm 100% I'm buying a ticket to this.
Yeah. Pretty Woman is just your classic, you know, old-fashioned Gary Marshall romantic comedy.
Have you heard the Gary Marshall story about Pretty Woman?
Yeah, about Jennifer Jason Leigh's audition to it.
But she hasn't been doing it that long.
It's the whole Alabama theory. No, It's a movie that I grew up on, oddly enough.
Me too.
I was like eight, and I'm just like, the king of wishful thinking.
Woohoo! God, I love that song. Yeah,
It Must Have Been Love is a jam.
I cry?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good ones.
Erica's mom used to tell her, it's not really like that.
Yeah.
No, a man really doesn't come save you if you... And yeah. She was like, Mom, I like this movie. Ma! I like this movie. It's not convincing me to be a prostitute. Like, you don't have to worry that it's talking me into a life of sex work.
It's weird, because, like, I'm not into that, but, like, if I had the gift card, I probably would have gone to Kit. Because I feel like you would get more for your buck. Anyways, so I just really like this movie. It rests completely on the charm of Richard Gere and Julia Roberts, and they're great in the movie. Vivre Sa Vie is a movie that I saw. It was when I was following the Music Box Theater schedule, like years and years ago. A lot of the movies that are on this list are things that I've discovered at rep theaters.
Okay.
So I wanted to kind of pay tribute to them in that way. It's one of the two Godard movies that I've seen. I've seen this and Band of Outsiders because I got hooked on Anna Karenina. Mm-hmm. I just find her fascinating. Mm-hmm. And this movie's interesting. It's very much the classic new wave aesthetic. Yeah, yeah. And it's told in chapter settings. And they're all like just these great short movies. And it's an hour and a half of just like being completely transported. And it's one of those things where you're like, oh, yeah, this movement wasn't it's not like this overrated thing. It's like, I get it. Like,
yeah,
this
right.
This is great.
Right, right.
This is great cinema. Sorry, Elric. Yeah. It's not pure cinema. It's just great cinema.
Which is our new spinoff podcast.
Yeah, great cinema. So this is a double feature that I think would be interesting from like a thematic through point, and it's two movies that I love.
And it's for two very different audiences. I feel like the audience that comes for Pretty Woman is walking out halfway through Vivre Sa Vie, and the audience that's coming for Vivre Sa Vie is like, we'll show up late. We don't need to be there for Pretty Woman.
And the only people there for both are me and you.
We'll get dinner first. So yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I showed a class Band of Outsiders last semester, and they, like, almost to a person disliked it, and I got really upset with them.
Yeah.
Like, that dance scene, and I'm like, how do you not like this?
Yeah.
Anyway. My night one is a tribute to my son Charlie, whose birthday is December 1st. Mm-hmm. So it is very basic, and I apologize. But the first movie is The Muppet Movie, because before he was born, I was painting his room, and we were decorating his room and like getting it ready for our first child. Mm-hmm. And the only decorations that we put up in his room, there were maybe a couple little animal print things or something, but we got three 11 by 17 posters framed of The Muppet Movie, The Great Muppet Caper, and Muppets Take Manhattan.
Nice.
And we hung them up in his room. So those movies will always make me think of Charlie when he was a brand new baby. So I went Muppet Movie for him, and then second I put Back to the Future because it's my favorite movie. I took him to see it once. It was a great experience for us. He really liked it, and it's a movie that all now makes me think of him as well. So the first night is just kind of a tribute to Charlie, and it would be a fun double feature.
Two real crowd pleasers.
Absolutely.
And great music in both of them.
Good point.
Yes. So you dedicated the opening night to your son.
That's right.
I did to sex workers. This is where we're at in our lives. Okay, night two?
Yeah.
Night two. It's a buddy western double feature.
Interesting.
Of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Like it.
And Open Range.
All right. A favorite of yours.
I love Open Range. I rewatched it recently, and it's even better than I remembered. And I just can't get enough of Duvall and Costner together. They are such a good just tandem, and they are good in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Where Duvall is this like avuncular type guy, and then I'll never not be fascinated by Costner in that movie because he's such a weird dude.
He does this all the time. Yeah. So many of the characters he plays are like unpleasant, unlikable, literally are pushing people away from him.
Yes, but like, then he's like, but wait a second.
In dialogue, not just like Waterworld's like that, Postman's like that, Open Range is like that. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
It's one of my favorite things about him. And then, and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid is just like, as I mentioned before, I mean, it's just magic. It's a great, great movie. And he'll show up later on this list, but I mean, Paul Newman was another guy that I discovered through rep cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And these didn't make the list, but I mean, like, when I saw Cool Hand Luke or The Hustler, I was just like, this guy outside of Jimmy Stewart might be my favorite of the classic actors.
Yeah.
Like, he's just so personable and interesting, and he's just funny and charming mm-hmm. and stuff. It's so, I mean, like, I only have one Western Night on here, and I wanted to pick two of my three favorites.
Yeah.
My third favorite is The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Ooh, very nice.
Amazing.
I might only have one Western Night on here too, which is crazy, because when I'm thinking about movies I want to see theatrically, Westerns are often the answer, because they should be seen on a big screen.
Yeah.
My second night is a double feature of Richard Rush's 1980 movie The Stuntman, followed by Burt Reynolds in Hooper.
I haven't seen either of those.
Okay. So they're both about stuntmen.
Yeah.
The Stuntman is a crazy, weird, kind of a mindfuck of a movie. Mm-hmm. Peter O'Toole giving an amazing performance as this sort of Svengali-like director, and Steve Railsback, you know, doing his best clueless, like, where do I go? Mm-hmm. which is just him on every set.
Yeah.
And then Hooper is just fun. I mean, it's Burt Reynolds just being crazy and, you know, Hal Needham directing a bunch mm-hmm. of cool practical stunts, and just a fun double feature.
Awesome.
Yep.
One, please.
Yep.
Do it. All right. Night three is Bronx Tales. So I have A Bronx Tale.
Got it.
And Summer of Sam.
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah.
I'm seeing this double feature too.
Yes. Summer of Sam, I think, is Spike Lee's most underrated movie. I think it's when we talk about the banner year that was 1999, it's not brought up enough. I think it's incredible. It's just great, great filmmaking, and sleazy as hell.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that about it.
Yeah.
And it's got some, like, I think it was the first time I noticed that I was a big fan of John Leguizamo when he wasn't doing comedic work.
When he wasn't playing demonic clowns.
Like, I really like him in dramas. I really like him as a dramatic actor. And then A Bronx Tale is just a movie that I grew up on a lot. Like, it was on HBO a lot, because I think HBO was, like, one of the production companies behind it. But it's De Niro's best effort.
They kept trying to get Chaz Palminteri over.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They really did. Never really clicked. But I think it's a really interesting, like, coming of age movie.
Yeah.
And he, I mean, De Niro obviously, like, really kind of fashioned it off of that early stretch of Goodfellas. And if you're a fan of that, I mean, like, there's plenty to like here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great double feature. My third night is Snowy Westerns.
Nice.
So it's McCabe and Mrs. Miller,
mm-hmm.
which was just talked about on the show last week.
I'll watch it with subtitles.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I haven't yet.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, watch it with subtitles, because it's hard to understand the dialogue. Followed by the 1968 Western The Great Silence, directed by the great Sergio Corbucci.
Okay.
Klaus Kinski. Just a great old Italian Western set in the snow.
Sounds good.
Should have done more Western nights, but I really like both of those movies. And again, it's like, I it's stupid to say there's no double feature on here I wouldn't see.
Yeah, they are your double features.
But I would be genuinely really excited. This is one that I would be really excited about.
Yeah. Yeah. When you mentioned Westerns, like, one of the things with this list is, we talked about it before, I tried to go out of my way to pick a lot of things that I've never talked about on the show
before.
Or haven't written about. So there's not really much horror at all.
I don't think I have any horror.
And part of it, I wanted to talk to you about this, is I took it to heart that it's December.
Me too.
And I don't want to watch horror in December.
Unless it's like Christmas horror.
Right, or it's new or something like that. Yeah. Like, I tend to, the winter months are my time where I usually gravitate towards drama or like comedy.
Yeah.
And things like that. I don't watch as much action or horror.
I probably have too much action, but almost no horror.
It's all good.
Yeah.
I had a version of this where it was a week of 90s action, but I'm like,
ooh,
we all know what those are. So,
yeah, but I'd go see every single one of them in a theater
two.
Again.
Part,
yeah,
when
oh,
we
for
schedule
sure.
January.
I like it.
part
of our weekly series.
Yes, so night four is John Grisham night.
Okay.
The Firm and The Rainmaker.
Yeah, I'm in.
I love lawyer movies, and The Firm is a movie that I saw very young and had no patience for,
mm-hmm.
and then, like, as I've gotten older, I could watch it every day, and The Rainmaker I've just always loved. I think it's maybe the best John Grisham movie.
For me, it is, for sure.
Yeah.
And that was one of those movies that I was incredibly resistant to.
Yeah.
I saw it on a day where I saw like four or five movies. Mm-hmm. I saw like The Jackal and Anastasia and Flubber and The Rainmaker, like possibly all the same day.
It's a real Molotov cocktail.
It was super weird. And yeah. The Rainmaker, it was like, well, it fits into the time slot. It's new. I haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. But I was like frustrated not only with John Grisham movies, but also that each of them were trying to push some hot new star. And I was like, Matt Damon, I don't know who you are. I'm not sold on you. So I sat down with a chip on my shoulder about The Rainmaker. And holy shit, do I love that movie.
Yeah, it's so good.
I love
it. Just such a deep cast with
Scheider and they all have incredible moments. And the dialogue is so great.
Yes. Yeah. Do you like The Firm?
I'm a little more mixed on The Firm. I haven't seen it in years. Okay. Like, I saw it a couple times when it came out, and then I haven't seen it since. I would probably like it more now.
It's the type, like, I have no complaints about Tom Cruise. I like Tom Cruise a lot. But it's the type of movie that I wish he made a few more of. Just he used to just do these types of movies more often, too.
Okay.
And now I feel like he really only does action, and I just miss drama Tom Cruise a little bit.
Well, but yeah, think about his last few dramas, though. Yeah. Like, nobody came to see them.
Like, Lions for Lambs?
Right. Even Valkyrie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of an action movie, right?
Yeah, I always think of that more as an action movie.
Okay.
Than a drama.
I just think people are not coming out to see him unless he's playing Ethan Hunt. Yeah. So, my problem with The Firm is that it suggests that anyone would step out on Gene Triplehorn.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But Hackman steps in.
That's true.
So that's good on him.
That's true. Thanks, Hackman.
Yeah, evil Holbrook.
My number four is the double feature that I put the least amount of thought in.
So okay, I'm excited.
What are two 80s action movies that I've never seen theatrically that I would like to see theatrically? And it is the 1988 adaptation of The Punisher, directed by Mark Goldblatt, starring Dolph Lundgren. Hopefully I can get my hands on a 35mm print of like the unrated cut.
Nice.
Followed by Blast Fighter, directed by Lamberto Bava, starring Michael Sopke, basically redoing First Blood, sort of.
That sounds great.
I love Blast Fighter. I mean, I like both of these movies are super fun, and it would just, like, again, I was trying to think of if I opened a newspaper and was like, holy shit, they're doing a double feature of what? Like, I couldn't get to the theater fast enough.
Yeah.
And that was what was sort of in my head when I came up with that one.
Dolph Lundgren will be at Monster Mania.
Interesting.
And I'm just like, I usually visit Rob in August.
Yeah, right.
Might have to do this in March.
Yeah. What would you, just meet him, get something signed?
I would sure get something signed, but I don't know.
Like Rocky IV?
I couldn't get Rocky IV.
Good.
Because Burt Young and Carl Weathers have been there previously, and I didn't get that. And I would, if I got something starting with a Rocky series with Lundgren, I would just be thinking of what I screwed up on earlier. I would and I know I'll never get Van Damme, so Universal Soldiers out.
Okay.
So I think I would have to go Masters of the Universe.
Yeah.
Because maybe Langella. Definitely
maybe.
Meg Foster.
Yeah. Chelsea Field.
I don't know.
And let's cross our
fingers.
She's
got that baculum money.
I know. She's swimming in that quantum leap cabbage.
Well, Cox won't do it.
Plus, if Langella, like, are you really not going to do draft day?
Well, I'll get two things.
I spent a long time at the Langella booth.
Yeah, I'm just going to. I'll probably get a Bo Callahan jersey. And I'm like, remember when you wanted this guy so bad? Can you sign it? But sign it as Alfred because that was your name in draft day?
I recently started adding pictures to people for people in my phone, like for my contacts, just for fun.
Yeah.
Your picture is Kevin Costner in draft day.
That's sweet.
So
that's like
every
how
time you text me, that's what will come up.
That's like how sometimes I forget that you don't look like Michael J. Fox.
Don't tell everyone.
Oh, okay. All right.
Don't blow my secret.
I apologize. Double features that didn't make it but almost did was Dennis Leary, Draft Day, and Judgment Night.
No, all right.
But
I'd see that.
I didn't feel like they meshed well enough.
Yeah, you might
together,
be right. You
so,
might be right.
Yeah. And also, why tribute Dennis Leary? He's fine, but whatever. So Night 5 is a damaged people in love double feature of Only the Lonely and Bed of Roses.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I love both of these movies unconditionally.
I love that you're like, you have a theater. You get to program 1 month. What are you putting up on the big screen? And you're like, Bed of Roses. 100%.
So Only the
80
Lonely
minutes.
In and out.
Of mental illness.
Only the Lonely is just by... it's my favorite John Candy performance and favorite John Candy movie. I think it's so sweet. It's just like Backdraft, where it's that perfect, like, this was Chicago in 1991. It's got the greatest scene, and it's got the greatest date scene in any movie, because he takes her on their first date. He takes Ally Sheedy to the old Comiskey Park for a picnic in the infield.
Wow.
It hits all the my buttons.
Yeah.
And then Bed of Roses, I needed a Christian Slater. I needed a Slater in here.
It's like you don't even, you're acting like Cuffs doesn't exist.
Well, that's you. This is your, that's your theater.
I didn't program
our theaters
Cuffs.
Are across the street from each other.
I don't want people to have to choose between Cuffs and Bed of Roses.
Well, maybe you show Cuffs first, so the people who don't want
like
to see
it. Yeah,
Only
yeah,
the
yeah.
Lonely can go across
they can
the
just do their Slater double.
Yeah, they can do their Slater double. A little literal theater hop.
So, I'm going to do a Slater double of Cuffs and Supergirl.
Yeah, yeah. Bed of Roses is it's a sneaky assassin of a movie. It's like you go in and you're watching it and you expect to see this
and you're
romantic
dead at the end.
You see this romantic drama and then you see and you're just like, wow, he's a little weird, but you don't know what you're in store for, because her crazy is so much overmatches his crazy. It's a great movie. I love it. Has that independent love song.
Yeah, it
thing
does.
With like, I'll show you how to change me. So good. If you have a chance to see Bed of Roses theatrically, even if it's DCP.
DCP or 35? What are we talking about?
35, stay alive.
Oh, man. With the cigarette burns and everything?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Pristine archival print of Bed of Roses, only screened once.
Yeah. So, your night five.
That's so weird, because my first movie is Bed of Roses.
Yes. I wonder if we're going to have matches. This will be interesting.
I wonder if we will. Yeah. Night five, Bad Heists. Stanley Kubrick's The Killing and Bottle Rocket.
Sweet.
Just people who kind of, you know, group together to rob a place and kind of are not great at it.
How good is The Killing?
So great.
It's so great.
Yeah, I really love it.
Sterling Hayden is the best.
And the more times I see Bottle Rocket, the more I like it, because Wes Anderson hadn't fully become Wes Anderson yet. I like, you know, full Wes Anderson in doses, but Bottle Rocket is free of a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I think maybe he was better when he was writing with Owen Wilson.
Okay.
Because I think the movies they did together are my favorites.
Did
I mean,
through Life Aquatic or just through
Tenenbaums? I don't think he's on Life Aquatic. Yeah, just through Tenenbaums. And I really like Grand Budapest Hotel, and I recognize Owen Wilson is not a writer on that, but those first three I really like.
Nice.
So.
Cool.
Bad Heists.
Okay, my night six is two from Martin Scorsese. Mm-hmm. It is After Hours and Bringing Out the Dead.
Interesting.
Because I wanted ones where
one crazy night movies.
One crazy night, burned out guys.
Yeah.
After Hours is amazing. Absolutely amazing. And whoa, Rosanna Arquette in that movie. But it's just one of those movies that I love where every scene is just this new, interesting character actor, and Griffin Dunn becoming more and more exasperated throughout the evening. I'm not the first to say this, it's like a waking nightmare, and it has that same kind of weird dream logic, and it's so good, and the music's great, and it's just, I love it. Will Patton's in it, Linda Fiorentino's in it, I mean, John Hurd's in it, I mean, it's just awesome. And then Bringing Out the Dead is the movie that, like, it's the Scorsese movie that I feel like I have to beat the drum for, because not a lot of people have seen it.
Another 99, another super underrated movie from a great director.
Yes, it's something that kind of hooked me, like, immediately when I saw it, but just over the years it's really grown even more so in my eyes, and wow, what a great Nicolas Cage performance in that movie.
So good.
He's so good. I mean, it's just that it takes into account, like, everything that he's good at in that movie. Like, his crazy makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's not just he's just doing it just to do it.
Right.
But he's also doing, like, the kind of withdrawn, depressed thing really well that he does in other movies. And, I mean, yeah, it's just a wonderful movie.
It's excellent. That's an amazing double feature.
Yeah. That's programmed.
The ordering is really good, too.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't want After Hours to go second.
No.
I think that's really strong. For most of it, you know, in terms of what comes first, what comes second, it was almost always like a gut feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really ever, like, slave over should this go first? Should this? It was like I kind of knew right away in most cases.
Yeah, in my cases, it was either if I couldn't decide, it was like chronological.
Oh, okay.
But if I could decide, it was usually either a mood thing or like what I wanted to send people out on,
right?
Like what
right.
last scene or right. what and stuff like that.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Night six, they keep pulling me back in. So it's,
Godfather 3?
I wish a 1973. So one of the things that I like about, the New Beverly sometimes, or again, as I was listening to that Pure Cinema episode, as they were going through, was that they'll turn you on to movies that maybe you haven't seen or even heard of.
Yeah.
So my first one is a 1973 movie that I really like called Family Honor. Mm-hmm. Which stars Tony Page as like a cop whose family was in the mob and they want him to kill some people. And he's like, but I can't, I'm a cop. And it's very crude and cheap and I still really like it. And then I was going to follow that with Oscar starring Sylvester Stallone.
Hello, Oscar.
They keep pulling me back in. So yeah. It's sort of a mob double feature, but not really.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be fun because one is a movie that people probably aren't really familiar with. And the other is a movie that I think people have written off, but I think is...
Yeah.
It's really fun and really good. There's a Kino Lorber just put out a Blu-ray. I'm hoping helps a little bit with people sort of reassessing that movie because I really like it.
Did you ever hear the story about how Stallone ended up doing Stop Where My Mom Will Shoot?
I have not.
Apparently, this was like a rivalry thing between Schwarzenegger and Stallone, and they like were really kind of at odds with each other at this time. And Schwarzenegger said that. As a practical joke, what he would do sometimes is he would tell his agent to leak that he was interested in certain things. So then Stallone would go after them, even though like Schwarzenegger wouldn't do it.
That's
and
so
Stop
perfect.
My Mom Will Shoot was the one time where he's like, yeah, tell, make sure that Stallone finds out that I'm about to do this. And then Stallone swoops in and takes it. And then Schwarzenegger said when the movie came out, he was just like, basically in hysterics because he thought it was so funny.
And that makes so much sense in terms of their dynamic in my head where yeah. Schwarzenegger is like kind of the jock who's like
yeah.
hazing the yeah. other guy who just like gets tricked into making the worst movie because he wants to be like the most popular and it backfires.
Yeah. I mean, it just made me love both of them even more.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Night seven, the
so
end
night
of week
seven,
one.
So I definitely took into account sometimes, like, well, not sometimes, all the time. I took into account what day of the week it is. Mm-hmm. So, like, if it's a Friday night.
I didn't
night,
even pay attention to that.
Okay,
so good for you.
So, if it's like a Friday night, I want something that's kind of, you know, just a fun Friday night, yeah. rock 'em, sock 'em. So, yeah. like, so I wanted to have a Keanu
Reeves. Oh, December 7th is a Friday?
Is a Friday.
Oh, I fucked this up.
Okay. Don't worry about it. So I booked a Fight Night double feature.
I like it.
Of Man of Tai Chi.
Love it.
With Ong Bak, the Thai Warrior.
Okay.
And it's two really kind of underseen action movies. Keanu Reeves directed Man of Tai Chi. I think it's so good.
It is.
And just because he's done so many great action movies, especially with John Wick recently, at 1 and 2, that I feel like this one's kind of gotten lost a little bit, and I want it to be rediscovered. And Tiger Chen needs to be in movies. Where is
he? Oh, my
he?
Gosh.
Like, where did he go? And
I loved him in that movie.
Keanu Reeves is such a fun bad guy in that movie.
I think people didn't quite understand yeah. his performance. I think they yeah. think it was an accident, and it's not.
No.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, he knows exactly what he's doing. And,
yeah.
And then Ong Bak, the Thai Warrior, is it was just like a lot of people, it was my introduction to Tony Jaa.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of that and The Protector. Did you ever see The Protector?
I never saw The Protector.
It's good. It's really interesting.
And I've never seen any of the Ong Bak sequels.
I heard the second one is more like this weird historical prequel, so I never wanted to because it wasn't anything about what I
right.
liked about the first one.
Right.
But this was like proto The Raid almost.
Yeah.
And it was such a surprise. It was one of those movies that played like at an AMC for a week. And
that's where I saw it.
Yeah. And then I saw the trailer for it just kind of on a whim. And then I told my cousin, I'm like, we have to go. Like, get your fucking coat on. Like, we're leaving right now. And the thing I loved about that movie was it was like all parkour and elbows and knees. Like, there's like, it's in the trailer, but I forgot about this. There's a scene where There's a guy, like, basically, like, lying after he got knocked down by Tony Jaa on this wooden platform. And then Tony Jaa jumps in the air, like, grabs both of his ankles with his hands, and then just pile drives this guy through the boards with his knees. And I'm just like, I love this movie. So I figured this two together would be a really fun action night.
That's fun. That's going to blow the doors off.
Yeah.
Speaking of the doors, I didn't even do that on purpose.
Woo!
This... well, maybe not the one I put the least amount of thought into. Okay. Easily my worst double feature.
I'm, like, I'm
hands
excited.
Down.
I'm excited.
It is Oliver Stone's The Doors, followed by Stargate.
What?
Exactly. And you're like, why would those two movies
walk me
be
through this?
This is the I'm not sure if I like this double feature.
Okay.
These are movies that I keep returning to, but I don't think I like.
Yeah.
I keep watching. I'm like, I like that movie, right? And then I go back to watch it. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I really like this. It's not the movie that I remember it being. And then 5 years go by and I'm like, I need to watch Stargate again. I like that movie. Yeah. And then I put it on after the first half hour. I'm like, I don't know if I like this movie. Same with The Doors. Terrible double feature, terrible billing, really just like, why are they showing these together? Okay, I've got nothing to do. And the really cool action double feature across the street is sold out because somebody put some thought into it, so let's go see this.
To be fair, I've never seen Stargate, surprisingly.
All right.
I really like The Doors also, but I don't know why.
Right.
It makes me feel horrible while I watch it.
It's a drag.
It's a total drag. I like The Doors music, but even the look of that movie, I think it's obviously they're like shooting for a period specific aesthetic and everything like that. But I don't know. It's like we've joked about this before, like I really like the drug addiction movies and I don't know why.
I can't stand drug addiction movies, but I found myself wanting to program a lot of like rock and roll movies because I was like, oh, big screen, that would be really fun, loud sound system, you know. I had to stop myself from programming a few, but this is the first of them. So.
Okay. I almost programmed Control. Have you ever seen that?
I never have.
It's
I know of
Joy
it.
Division.
Yeah.
It's really good. Okay. I almost programmed that with 24-hour Party People.
Okay.
And then I almost programmed Woodstock because that's my favorite new discovery of the year, but it's like 4 hours long.
Yeah.
And then I almost programmed Stop Making Sense.
Ooh, that would have been a good one.
It would have been
too.
A good one.
Yeah.
So they will have to go to a different rep theater
for
that. Okay, Saturday. It is a Con Men double feature.
Yep.
Catch Me If You Can and Matchstick Men.
I'm in.
Both movies are light as a feather and entertaining as all hell. It's the DiCaprio that I don't just like, I love. It's the charming rascallion DiCaprio of him in this and Wolf of Wall Street. I remember with that movie, I thought just by reading the plot synopsis before I saw a trailer, that it was going to be, like, serious. I thought it was going to be, like, a drama because it's about, like, a guy who was one of the FBI's most wanted men. And up to that point, it was, like, Hanks was mostly doing dramatic things. And then I saw the trailer for it. I'm just like, well, this just looks delightful. And then when I saw it, it's just, it's great. It's one of the, it's maybe my favorite movie of 2002. And Matchstick Men is just a movie that I usually don't like grifter movies too much, but this one really cares about the inner lives and emotions of the Nicolas Cage character in particular. And I was really drawn to it, and it has reserved seating royalty, Alison Lohman in it.
So I really like both of these movies, and I think they are considered lesser movies in their respective directors' filmographies because I think people forget, like, when a great filmmaker makes it look easy, I think it's like, well, then who cares? That's not one of their, you know, sort of elevated masterpiece movies. But, like, no, these are two really incredibly solid, incredibly entertaining movies made by two really good directors. I remember seeing Matchstick Men, and Alison Lohman was someone who didn't exist. She wasn't on my radar at all because I hadn't seen, what, Flicka? Had that come out already?
Yeah, I don't know where she started out.
So there's a twist in the movie that blew my mind. I mean, now it wouldn't if you go back and watch it because Alison Lohman is a person that we know, but at the time I was like, whoa, what? And it was like seeing Orphan.
It's all I was thinking that too. It's also one of those things where it's, you know, that you get tricked almost because you don't see you don't want to believe the twist is gonna happen because you like this story of this guy having this estranged daughter and they reconnect and everything, and then when it happens it's so bitter.
And I respect the movie's willingness to commit to it.
Yeah. And then The way that it ends, it's mm-hmm. not a cheat. Right. It's not like an easy way out, but it also is very sympathetic mm-hmm. to the lead character, and I really appreciate that Ridley Scott did that, and it wasn't just like a complete bitter pill.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But also not just cheap sentiment.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Saturday night, December 8th, Mall Movies.
Nice.
Observe and Report.
Good.
Followed by the original Dawn of the Dead.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So I Observe and Report, I just love, and I would like to introduce more people to it, and I think that's a movie that would be really fun to see with an audience who has never seen it before, mm-hmm. because where it ends up is just bananas.
Yeah.
And so I'd love to hear the reaction during the scene. If you guys have seen it, you're familiar with it, and I think that movie is just one of the best comedies of the last however many years. And Dawn of the Dead, you know, is notoriously hard to see theatrically, mm-hmm. so I'm like, well, if we're doing this fantasy, I'm going to program Dawn of the Dead and show a 35 millimeter print, which almost never occurs, I don't think. So that was a cheat, but it's one of my favorite movies, so I figure, what the hell?
That's awesome.
And one of the only horror movies I programmed the entire month.
It would be funny if we didn't program certain things because, like, oh, we couldn't source a print.
If we shoot ourselves down, even in our wildest fantasies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, Sunday the 9th. It's an Al Pacino in Love double feature of Sea of Love and Frankie and Johnny.
Like it?
I don't even like Frankie and Johnny, but I love...
Two Gary Marshalls, by the way, so far on your calendar.
Weird. So weird. Two Nicolas Cages so far.
Oh, yeah. Well, Gary Marshalls. I understand. Yeah. The Gary Marshall. I wait until Dear God shows
There's only
up.
One Spielberg on here, but there's two Gary Marshalls.
You got to pay tribute to the masters.
Yeah. So, Frankie and Johnny is a movie I've seen once, but I saw it before I started the Al Pacino series with Rob. And now that I'm... have grown so much love for Al Pacino's work. I feel like it's his most Pacino performance. Like anything you would ever want from Al Pacino in a performance is in doses in Frankie and Johnny. Except for maybe Scarface.
Do you think he studied to be a short order cook in order to play in Frankie and Johnny?
For sure. But the thing I like about both of these movies are Al Pacino desperately in love is one of the most entertaining things you could ever see because he is like a puppy. He's just like a jumping puppy when you walk through the door who hasn't seen you all day and has been otherwise sitting at the door moping. Sea of Love, I saw for the first time early this year. It's one of my favorite new discoveries of the year. I was so expecting it just to be Basic Instinct type thing.
Right.
But it's not. It's like this drama, just as much as a thriller about these two like damaged people of a certain age looking for like a last chance at normalcy and love.
Mm-hmm.
And I joked with Rob that this should have started an entire series called Gimmick Cop, where it's just like, we got a bust, but we're going to do a Yankees brunch to get them. Or like, we're going to find the woman who's killing all these lonely hearts, but we're going to do it with this restaurant customer charade. Like it's a great movie. Harold Becker directed it, who I've grown to become a big fan of. Sea of Love, and I'd love to rewatch Frankie and Johnny.
Sea of Love is one of those movies that you watch and you're just like, God, I miss movies like this.
Yes.
Like, they just don't exist. And again, it's been nice. I told a class last week was our last night, and we were just talking about where movies are in the 2000s, and I painted a pretty grim picture. But I said, you know, the good news is you can watch a brand new movie, a new movie to you every day for the rest of your life
mm-hmm.
and only see good stuff, like, because there's just enough great stuff from the past that exists.
Yeah.
So please watch older movies. Sea of Love isn't even, you know, especially old. It's what, 89?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, it depresses me that movies like that don't get made because we took them for granted in 89.
For sure. Yeah. They were just the movie that came out on September 20th.
Yep.
And now it's just like, this is one of the greatest
movies. Like, oh God.
It's like don't make SWAT.
SWAT was another one of those that I went in with just basement expectation. Was like, I was unreasonably entertained by SWAT.
That almost made this list because it's...
Are you SWAT or not?
Oh, God. But, I mean, like, back in 03, I wasn't a fan of Colin Farrell, Michelle Rodriguez, Jeremy Renner, And, like, they're all awesome in that movie. And, like, now I'm just, like...
One of the great bad guy deaths, too. Because it's so matter-of-fact.
Yeah.
And just, like, and it's over.
Yeah.
Like, so great.
It also started my Josh Charles game that I have with a friend of mine.
Okay.
Where it's... I dared him to say Josh Charles 10 times really fast, and his brain almost exploded.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it's just, like, so many...
I've never tried, but...
So many S's and H's and C's and stuff. You just, like, sound like...
Josh Charles. Oh, no!
Yeah.
My number 9 is the only, like, sort of traditional double feature, in terms of it being a movie and a sequel.
Okay.
Because I wanted to program some Mark Lester, because I love Mark Lester, and I feel like he might show up if I do a night of his movies. So I went Class of 1984 and Class of 1999.
Nice.
Both just really fun genre action movies that I think would play great with a crowd. Class of 1984 I've liked for years, not just because Michael J. Fox is in it, but just because it's so bananas. Class of 1999 I watched on VHS years ago and was like, whatever.
Yeah.
And then recently Vestron put it out on Blu-ray and I was like, god damn, I slept on this movie. This movie is so much fun. Just great cast, tons of practical effects and explosions. And again, I just sound so old, but like just talking about Sea of Love, like a B movie like Class of 1999, like had some money and like they got to do stuff in it and went all out. And it just is so, so entertaining. So I think that and the movies are essentially the same movie inverted. You know, Class of 84 is like there's a school and then these horrible students show up and we have to kill the horrible students. Class of 1999 is like all the students are punks and then these evil robot teachers show up and we have to kill the teachers.
Sounds good.
It just inverts it Terminator 2 style.
I like
but
it.
Man, they are so much fun and they're different enough that you wouldn't feel like you're watching the same movie twice.
Nice.
So I think that would be a fun night.
I would totally go. Totally go.
Totally.
Okay, so Monday night I went for two from Sofia Coppola. She's one of my favorite modern directors. And I was really tempted to do her two hotel movies, but I didn't.
Hotel for Dogs and Hotel Artemis.
And Hotel for Coppola Dogs. Where they get wine. And I have you seen Hotel Artemis yet?
I have not.
Okay. It won the Business Award for Most Red Box.
I was going to say, how? Den of Thieves came out this year. I am insulted.
Den of Thieves was best soccer team.
All right. I'll allow it. But yeah, Hotel Artemis, by the way, I am going to Redbox at some point.
Yeah, it's good. It's like perfectly good Redbox.
Right.
So I picked Marie Antoinette.
Yeah.
Which I don't think totally works, but it's one of those movies I've come back to a lot. And it's a really good Kirsten Dunst performance. And I think Sofia Coppola is using... Marie Antoinette as an interesting commentary on like the Paris Hilton era of celebrity.
Yeah,
and I love the whole new wave music choice and just again like we were talking about with The Favorite, just kind of that setting and time period. And then I paired it with Somewhere, which I think is completely underrated.
Yeah.
And I find it just to be so involving and I think Elle Fanning in that movie is such a discovery. Like it was that and Super 8 in the same year and you're just like this, she's so like I don't even know how to describe it, just like mature for like a kid actor and you just like can't wait to see her for her entire rest of her career. I love the specificity of it because obviously like Coppola has stayed at the Chateau Marmont before and she kind of like gets the romanticism and also kind of the sadness of it and the history of it. And it's not a place that I've ever been to. I looked when I went out to LA to see how much it would cost to stay there. It was a lot. So I didn't, but it's a movie that I wish more people would see. And usually the people who see it don't tend to like it. But I think that if you pair it with another Coppola movie by the second movie, you might be kind of in the mindset to it.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has the vibe of kind of a European 60s movie.
Yeah.
And I think it has a really good Stephen Dorff performance.
He
had become, I don't want to say a punchline, but it's just he's Stephen Dorff and he made a lot of bad movies.
Yeah.
And, but again, you're reminded that like the right actor with the right material can still knock your socks off. And it didn't, you know, launch a comeback for him and he hasn't gone on to do the other great movies or great performances, but it reminds you of like, oh, that's why Stephen Dorff became a thing, right? Because he's really good in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like that movie a lot. That's a.
I'm glad to hear it.
That's a solid night. I'm going to go the other way. And instead of programming art house darling Sofia Coppola, I did a Ken Wall double feature for my 10th night. The reason is the first time the New Beverly ever came on my radar, this was years ago. I don't remember what it was. I saw maybe we were out in LA and I saw like a flyer or a calendar. Maybe I just looked on the website or something. One of the movies that they were showing as a double feature was this Ken Wall movie, The Taking of Beverly Hills. And I was like, oh my God, there's a movie theater in Los Angeles that's showing The Taking of Beverly Hills.
That's great.
I want to be there. Yeah. Well, how do I get to this theater? And since then, I was kind of obsessed with the New Beverly. So my Ken Wall double feature is Race for the Yankee Zephyr, followed by The Taking of Beverly Hills, which is an action movie I like a whole lot.
What year's Race for the Taking
Zephyr? I want to say 1981.
Okay.
Sometimes known as Treasure of the Yankee Zephyr, directed by David Hemmings of Blow Up and Deep Red fame. David Hemmings, the actor, directed Race for the Yankee Zephyr. It's got George Peppard, it's got Donald Pleasance, it's got Leslie Ann Warren, who's just unbelievable, and she's kind of doing this screwball thing opposite Ken Wall, playing a character named Barney. Super hard movie to come by for years. I want to say it was like a New Zealand production. Super hard to come by for years. It is now out on Blu-ray, I think, from Kino again, but really entertaining.
I really want to watch Taking of Beverly Hills.
Have you seen it?
No.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
you gotta come here one night and watch
it.
I love it.
I'm done.
That would be a very entertaining night. And Ken Wall is not necessarily a great actor, but he's made a lot of movies that I like. I really was gonna put The Wanderers in, but I was like, I think I'd much rather introduce people to Race for the Yankee Zephyr.
Okay, I never saw The Wanderers, but I remember seeing the trailer for it and it kind of catching my interest.
It's super good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good. No, I really like that because I have a few nights similar to that where it's like, nothing makes me happier to do this exercise than giving a tribute night to somebody who ordinarily wouldn't get a tribute night.
Right.
It makes me so happy as a movie fan. Okay, so my next one is a boxer double feature.
Okay.
Somebody Up There Likes Me.
Which I've never seen.
Paul Newman.
First movie I haven't seen.
Angeli.
Okay.
It's about Rocky Graziano. And it's a very, like, melodramatic 50s boxer movie, but it's so... he's so charismatic in it, and it's such a watchable movie that I really enjoyed it.
Paul Newman showing up as much as Gary Marshall.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, too bad they didn't work together.
Can you think of... Gary Marshall did The Verdict, right?
No.
I'm joking.
Sorry. I was like, what?
You haven't been practicing law that long.
Yeah. It's like... So I'm supposed to hit her in this scene? It's like, but she did stuff that was wrong. So, yeah, Somebody Up There Likes Me. And then it would really make sense to pair it with Rocky. And that was the movie that I had it with. But I wanted to focus on something that not a lot of people have seen or not enough people have seen. And as the documentary, When We Were Kings.
Which I also haven't seen.
Rumble in the Jungle fight with George Foreman. It is maybe one of my favorite documentaries ever. It's fantastic.
I'm literally adding it to my want to see Letterboxd list right now.
There is nothing that you could do to replace seeing Muhammad Ali for real in, I won't say the prime of his life, but in one of the most important moments of his career. And it's after so much has happened to him with just being banned from boxing. And then George Foreman is unrecognizable in this because he was such a different fighter and person before this experience. And then after it, like he went through this massive depression and basically just did like a complete 180 on his personality because he realized he was like, he couldn't be the same way anymore. But he's such a scary, imposing figure in this. And like, it's a concert movie mixed with a boxing fight, and it's so interesting, and the personalities in it are so compelling. It's why I don't like Ali at all.
Okay.
Is because When We Were Kings is so much better of a representation of who he was at that time, at least in spirit, if not as a man. So I adore that movie. I haven't seen it enough times, and I would love to see it in a theater.
I really like that double feature, not only because I haven't seen either movie, but also because you're not just doing the same boxing movie twice.
Yeah.
You found a way to do two boxing movies that are different enough from each other. He's doing the
champ
the winner stands right now. So, yeah, I think that's great. That's super smart. I went with another actor double feature for December 11th, Rita Hayworth double feature, You'll Never Get Rich, and The Lady from Shanghai.
I have seen The Lady from Shanghai. I haven't seen the first one.
Lady from Shanghai is not my favorite Rita Hayworth, mostly because I don't necessarily like seeing her as sort of a femme fatale, but I don't want to go with Gilda because I'm not 100% in on Glenn Ford yet. Like, I've liked him and stuff, but he's a little bit of a Gary Cooper for me, where I'm just like, I kind of wish you were someone else. But Gilda's good. I just was trying to do kind of two different shades of Rita Hayworth. You'll Never Get Rich is like a musical that she did with Fred Astaire, and it will melt your heart like Hayworth. My goodness. It is a delightful movie, and she is, you just want to see her in everything.
Yeah.
Just such a... Anyway.
Did that come before Lady in Shanghai?
It did, yeah. It was maybe her first kind of leading role, I believe.
Yeah.
It was kind of the movie that made her a big star.
Is that the one where she does the thing with her hair?
That's Gilda.
Oh, that's Gilda.
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't seen Gilda.
Okay. Gilda's good, but again, Glenn Ford. You'll Never Get Rich is like you watch somebody become a movie star in the span of a movie.
Nice.
And there was just no one like her, so...
Okay. All right, so I have an actor tribute night.
All right,
on the 12th, it is When Harry Met Sally with City Slickers. Two for my boy Bruno Kirby.
Oh wow!
He was one of those character actors that just always clicked for me.
Yeah,
I really like Bruno Kirby
a lot. Yeah, R.I.P.
It happened in it was When Harry Met Sally, The Freshman, City Slickers, like all around that time period. Again, he was one of those actors that just kind of, like, reminded me of, like, a real guy that, like, I would, like, my dad would be friends with in Chicago. Like, I just always liked that about him. And he's funny, but not in a way that's, like, he's going for the joke.
Right.
It's just, like, he's just kind of just, like, doofy. And I really like that about him. I mean, like, he does... There's certain things that he does in movies that if it was another actor, it wouldn't make me laugh. But in stuff like in City Slickers, where like he's so wants to be a cowboy that he like hawks the chewing tobacco and it lands on a shirt. And then just like real quick, he's like, I'll take that shirt too. Like that. And then I think When Harry Met Sally is a romantic comedy I love for, I mean, like the reasons everybody loves it. Yeah. But it's one of those movies where it's like, it's two great romantic comedies in one because Bruno Kirby and Carrie Fisher are just as adorable as Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal. So like, I love it. It almost played my New Year's Eve night because it was...
I thought about that as well because of where it ends, right?
Where it ends, but I decided to go in a different direction for it, but I couldn't...
I wonder if we have the same New Year's.
I couldn't cut it, so I needed to keep it in here and...
Bruno
Kirby tribute.
Very nice. Yeah. I like it a lot. City Slickers, like, shouldn't be as good as it is.
It's so good.
It's so solid, and it's like, it shouldn't be. It should just be this dumb comedy, right? And it's so not.
It's made with such heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
December 12th, I have City Mouse versus Country Mouse, which is a double feature of...
Oh, I thought that was the name of the movie.
No, I wish.
Like, what?
A double feature of Prime Cut and Next of Kin.
Okay.
Prime Cut was one of my favorite discoveries from last year. It's a Michael Ritchie movie from like 1972. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, man. Lee Marvin
and
Gene Hackman.
You got my interest.
Yeah. It's like Lee Marvin has to infiltrate basically this group of kind of gangsters / meat packers. Sissy Spacek, young Sissy Spacek is in it. It's an amazing movie.
Can we take a break?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's out on Blu-ray as well. And then Next of Kin was like, well, what would go with Prime Cut? Next of Kin, probably not my favorite like 80s Swayze, but not my favorite 80s Swayze, but is one of those movies that's like you kind of forget existed. And you're like, oh, yeah, Swayze made that movie Next of Kin. And then you watch it and the cast list is so deep. Before most of these people, Liam Neeson, Adam Baldwin, Helen Hunt, Bill Paxton, Ben Stiller, Michael J. Pollard, Ted Levine, Del Close, all in the same movie. Right.
Holy
exactly.
Shit.
So, I think those two movies would pair well. And I don't know. I think it would be a good double feature.
That sounds really, really good.
Yeah.
The 13th, I have a double feature of The Third Man.
Nice.
And Before Sunrise.
Interesting.
For Vienna.
Oh, nice.
two different eras of Vienna. Eras. Two movies I love. I don't know tonally if they really fit much at all, but The Third Man is a movie I discovered in my years of going to rep theaters, and I like it more, not that it's a contest, but I like it more than Citizen Kane. I love the music. I love the sense of humor. It's like another thing with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid where it's a lark until it's not.
Right.
And then it's so impactful because it was a lark before, and it's right. Such a tragedy.
Yeah.
And it's the movie that made me a Joseph Cotten guy.
Oh my gosh.
I think he's so fantastic. Yeah. And it was a large part of the discovery of him in that movie. And then Before Sunrise is, of all the romantic films that have ever been made, it's one of the ones that hits me the most personally in a lot of ways. I feel like I don't have many like litmus tests for like relationships, but I feel like if you watch Before Sunrise with a person that you're dating, and they have either like no tolerance for it while watching it with you, that means that they're not ever going to fall in love with you and you could just kind of cut bait.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, one of the things that's nice is in recent years, people kind of have gotten are becoming more vocal about how great Ethan Hawke is, and then like when you look back, he's been doing it for so long, and I just think that he's such a like an open actor. Mm-hmm. And he's great in this, in a role where it's like I always see it as kind of like my wish fulfillment sequel of his character in Reality Bites, where it's like grows up in that movie.
Or it's a movie that like sort of calls that character out on his bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I just love kind of the naivete of a lot of the conversations too, but it's like in a good way where you're looking back and you're just like, I was just like that. And, the stuff that I thought was such a good idea, like he has that idea where it's like the documentary series that's like the Truman Show and it's just banal bullshit and stuff, and she's just like, so you want people just to watch your boring shit all day? And it's just like, no, there's the poetry of life. And she's like, oh yeah, the poetry of life. It's just nonstop conversations like that,
and
it's great.
And I remember that coming out in theaters and I was of an age where I was like, I'm probably not gonna see that. Like, why am I gonna see Ethan Hawke, you know, didn't mean much to me at that time because of the movies, the kinds of movies he was making.
Yeah.
Julie Delpy meant nothing to me because I didn't really know who she was.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, a teenager, and I'm like, what am I? I'm not going to go see Bed of Roses. I'm not going to go see Before Sunrise either. And then somebody I like only kind of knew and whose opinion in movies I had zero respect for was like, oh no, you should see this movie Before Sunrise. It's so good. And I took her up on it and I rented it, and it just knocked me out. I mean, I just love that movie so much. So.
Yeah.
Never close your minds, people.
Instant family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah. I did a girls rock and roll double feature for Night 13. Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains, followed by Satisfaction, starring Justine Bateman. Again, a movie I want to see in a theater with a crowd.
Yeah.
We did an episode last year about earlier this year, underrated 1988 movies with Brian Sauer of Pure Cinema, who, of course, helped inspire this episode. And I went on and on about my love for Satisfaction. Fabulous Stains, of course, gets a little Dern in our night.
Yes.
And that movie's amazing if you guys haven't seen it.
Was that before or after Streets of Fire?
It was before. It was before. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Really fun. I mean, one is like a serious kind of edgy kind of punk movie, and then Satisfaction is just ridiculous. But it's the second Liam Neeson movie in two nights.
There,
so there's that.
He's your Gary Marshall.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Gary Marshall directs Taken 4.
Hasn't been kidnapped for that long.
You're playing Oscar Schindler and it's in heaven. It's okay. I can say that I'm Jewish and it's Hanukkah.
A few more hours.
Friday night, the 14th, I did Hangout Movies, American Graffiti, and Dazed and Confused.
Very nice.
So, just two movies that are effortless to watch, populated with nonstop charismatic and likable actors.
Yeah.
Fantastic music, just fun, melancholy at the same time, but not too much so, Well, maybe American Graffiti.
You got Linklater two nights in a row.
Oh, yeah. Linklater two nights in a row.
Tomorrow night, you're showing the Newton boys.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like Waking Life. And then
tape.
It's just a double feature that I would really like to see. And I would love to see American Graffiti not at the Portage projected horribly.
Right. On video or whatever. Yeah. No, that's killer. And that would sell out for sure.
Yes.
Unlike my Ken Wall double feature. Which is only for the most devoted.
Yeah, I was going to say, but you'll get the most quality people.
My night 14, we're almost halfway through the month, and I wanted Erica to program a night because she loves movies as much as I do and didn't get to program the rest of the month. So I said, can you program a night? So she went with something that we decided to call Chi-2K, which is Chicago movies that came out in the year 2000.
Okay.
Return to Me and High Fidelity.
Oh, okay.
Return to Me is a really terrific romantic comedy. I wish Bonnie Hunt made more movies. And at first it was going to be, she was going to do a double feature of movies that she put on her, or movies she would always recommend when she worked at Blockbuster to customers who were looking for something and that never missed. Mm-hmm. No matter who she recommended Return to Me to, they came back and they're like, that was really good. Nobody ever came back disappointed with Return to Me.
Yeah.
And she couldn't think of a second one necessarily. So she said, oh, what about, you know, Chicago movies from the 2000s? And High Fidelity is just High Fidelity. It's great. So that's a killer double feature.
I've never seen Return to Me.
For real?
Yeah, and it's on
It will melt your heart, my man.
I want to see it.
It's so good.
I'm going to make it a priority.
I genuinely think, I hate to do this because it's going to, you know, I don't want to build shit up in your head.
Sure.
Knowing the kinds of movies you like,
yeah.
I think you're going to like it.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Fun fact, I did not know that this happened separately, once in high school and once like 5 years ago. I have been friends with two separate Bonnie Hunt nieces because Bonnie Hunt is from the area.
I have one of my friends who I used to be in a band with. He was the drummer. He's like, I guess the nephew of Bonnie Hunt?
Yeah.
I just want to meet Bonnie Hunt. I want Bonnie Hunt in my life.
I basically had a list of all of her co-stars that I've ever been interested in. And I'm just like, what was Steve Martin like? What was Tom Hanks like? And I got the rundown. And I don't want to talk shade about anybody, but I'll tell you afterwards.
Okay.
There's one that's surprising where I'm just like, really?
Really?
And then some that I thought would be
okay.
Great. Or bad, but they were great.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to hear this. Yeah. I love Bonnie Hunt so much.
So, I do too. She's fantastic.
I'm excited for that double feature.
Yep.
Thank you, Erica.
Number the 15th. This is the most personal one for me. It is two movies.
Two by Gary Marshall.
Nope.
Dear God and the Other Sister.
Nope. They are both in my, I did my top five show years ago. One of them was on this list. One of them was not. It's now in my top five. And it is Saturday Night Fever, which might be my favorite movie now.
Okay.
And Dogfight.
Oh, very nice.
Boys to Men Night.
I love it.
Because
that's really solid.
That is, they're two movies that I just adore. And I think that, it's hard for me to even talk about them. But they call bullshit on a certain type of toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. And it's endearing and heartening that these guys, these protagonists, are recognizing that. And I think it has a lot to say about how a lot of bad male behavior is because it's part of a structure of men trying to impress other men. Whereas as individuals, they wouldn't do this. Saturday Night Fever is very just great, just cinematically, a lot of music and everything like that. And Travolta is amazing in that movie. And then Dogfight, it's the movie that will break your heart that River Phoenix isn't around. And I love certain things that they do in that movie. It's stuff like how they really ugly up Lily Taylor's character purposefully. And then throughout the rest of the movie, she gets prettier and prettier and prettier. And it's like, that's how he sees her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a knockout ending. It's so beautiful and empathetic and everything like that. And it makes me sad that Nancy Savoca hasn't directed 30 movies by now. She did that, and she did a movie called True Love with Ron Dard and Annabella Sciorra. That's good.
I never saw that, and I remember it.
I went back and watched it when we had like our 1989 week for F This Movie Fest, and I liked it a lot. It's and then she ended up doing a lot of television after that, like HBO movies. But Saturday Night Fever and Dogfight are great, and especially if you're like a man or a boy in high school, early college age, please watch them. It'll make you a better person.
And I like, too, that's one of those really good double features, because I think it brings people into the theater to see Saturday Night Fever on the big screen, which they should, and then they get to stick around and see something that maybe they haven't, but is going to be with them forever.
And the PG version of Saturday Night Fever. I don't need that filth. I don't need that R filth.
December 15th, I figure it's halfway through the month. We're tired of it being cold because our theater is in Chicago, not Los Angeles. We need to warm up. So I went a double feature of Beach Party and Summer School.
Wow, I like it.
I just thought I'm a fan of the Beach Party movies. The first one is still my favorite, and Summer School is just one of those 80s comedies I can't get enough of.
So good.
I love it. Yeah.
It's so great.
And my in, you know, in 1987 was the Chainsaw and Dave thing. Oh, these guys, they love horror movies, and there's this scene where they do all these gross special effects.
Yeah.
But now I watch it, and I'm just in for all of it. I'm just like, Freddie Shoup, man, Mark Harmon is a charm factory.
He really is. He's great. Yeah.
And you know, it feels like one of those things where, oh, the TV star is trying to make it in movies, like when all the cast of Friends made their movies. But
I think I kind of got into that movie because of Kirstie Alley at the time, because I was watching Cheers,
another TV star like trying to you know make it on the big screen. But I'm a fan of that movie.
It's good,
and really I figured that would be a really fun double feature.
Yes. My next one is kind of obvious, kind of on the nose, easy, something doesn't take a lot of creativity, but it has to be done. It's two from Jack Nicholson, Five Easy Pieces, and The Last Detail.
Ooh, very nice.
Because they're both fucking great movies, and nobody nowadays is as good as Jack Nicholson was in the 1970s.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He is so good in such a different kind of way, because he's not your traditional leading man. He's like the guy that you would want to be, but then you realize how sad it must be to be that guy.
Right.
And Five Easy Pieces, as somebody who goes to flashback weekend screenings but then bails like because he can't sit there anymore. The ending of Five Easy Pieces really where it's just like I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta get out of here. I don't care if it how it looks. I need to leave. So that movie's great. And then The Last Detail is the best road trip movie ever, and Hal Ashby is a genius, and I love that movie. And they made a great far away sort of sequel to it called Linklater.
I know. I still haven't seen it either.
Last Flag Flying a few years ago. I really like that movie, and I don't want to pair those two together because I feel like you can only match The Last Detail with another classic Nicholson. So those are my two for that.
I showed a class Last Detail that same semester. It went over better than Band of Outsiders.
Yeah.
How could it not, right?
Yeah.
That's an amazing double feature. Night 16, I went Mad Scientist, The Man with Two Brains, and Frankenhooker.
Nice.
That's it. Just both incredibly fun, entertaining movies. The Man with Two Brains, one of my favorite 80s comedies. I prefer it to stuff like The Jerk, even though The Jerk is really fun. Those Carl Reiner, Steve Martin movies, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, all three of those are terrific. Man with Two Brains is my favorite. That movie just kills me. And I just think it would be really fun to pair it with something like Frankenhooker. I don't know. They're both just kind of these whacked out comedies in different ways, and I just thought it would be a fun night.
Yeah, that sounds really, really good.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we have our first match.
Oh.
Because Monday the 17th, I have The Killing.
Oh, okay.
And I paired it with Barry Lyndon for my two for Stanley Kubrick.
Very nice.
They're very different movies, but you
both
can't go
awesome.
Wrong. You can't go wrong with Stanley Kubrick.
No.
And Barry Lyndon is the one that I go through phases with where different Kubrick movies are my personal favorite or the one I'm drawn to the most at the time. For a long time, obviously, it was 2001. I went through kind of a Killing phase. That sounded bad. I went through a phase with The Killing. I went through phases with like Paths of Glory, The Shining. And right now, it's the Barry Lyndon one. Like, I just...
Yeah, there's a real case to be made there.
I love Barry Lyndon because The Wolf of Wall Street's another one that does it. I love when filmmakers make epics about people who don't deserve epics.
Yeah, right.
And because it takes away all of the kind of, and then this happened, like,
right,
hitting the beats of it, because these,
right,
people are losers.
Right.
So, like, you really get to know these people, and you, and I just think that it's like reverse Forrest Gump.
Right.
It's like the same.
And the
trajectory.
best use of Ryan O'Neill ever in a movie.
Oh yeah, for sure. And
the Driver
that,
is good, but Barry Lyndon is better.
I love that it was almost supposed to be Redford, because I'm just like, I see you like I,
yeah,
like Stanley Kubrick does.
Yeah.
So, but
that's fucking harsh. Stanley Kubrick.
The music in Barry Lyndon is some of those. It's maybe the most beautiful score,
yeah,
I, ugh, have ever heard in a movie.
You're making me want to watch it right now.
I love it.
And I've never seen it theatrically, so
I haven't either.
That would be amazing.
Next time it's playing at Music Box, we gotta go.
They should pair it with The Killing. Yes. Why are you not programming the Music Box?
Because
maybe they'll listen to this episode and let us. They're like, "Oh, Ken Walnight? Yeah, sure, you're hired."
Yeah, I mean, all right. Here's the thing: I saw the new calendar for the Music Box, guys. I would love to talk to somebody over there, and I'm not saying you're not doing your jobs well, but I don't get it.
Yeah.
And I would love to help.
Yeah, yeah. So I wish we had a theater.
If you're listening to this show, help us get a theater so we can program these movies.
I've got Hal Ashby on this double feature, which, okay, I don't know how to title it, but it makes sense in terms of what the movies are about. It's Billy Wilder's The Apartment and Shampoo.
Okay.
Because they're both sort of romantic comedies with a very sort of bitter, cynical, this is what it takes to get ahead in America attitude about them. I think they would pair really well together. And I they're both great movies. So
I need to see both of them. I've never seen
You've never seen either one?
No.
Fuck.
I've been intimidated by The Apartment.
The Apartment's amazing.
I don't know why.
It's amazing. But, and Shampoo is really good, because we were texting about Warren Beatty.
Yeah.
And
I
said,
just kind of starting to get into Warren Beatty.
It's one of maybe this and McCabe and Mrs. Miller are the two best uses of Warren Beatty, and again demonstrate that he, like Paul Newman, like here's a guy who's incredibly handsome and can be charming, right?
Yeah.
Who sometimes makes a choice to actively play against his own image and did some really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, Shampoo is great.
Okay, so the 18th is our last night before Christmas
week. That's
right.
Week. That's right.
So I did a tribute night to Lee J. Cobb.
Amazing.
Because he's a character actor.
You just lost us the Music Box gig, but that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. He's a character actor that I really grew to like, just watching him in On the Waterfront and The Exorcist and the two movies that I paired for this. So I did 12 Angry Men.
Nice.
Which is just the classic. And what else can you say about 12 Angry Men? It's a perfect movie.
Yeah.
And then I paired it with a very underseen Chicago journalism Jimmy Stewart movie called Northside 777.
Oh, I like that movie.
It's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not ever talked about.
Yeah.
It was one of the movies that they played during like one of those noir festivals at the Music Box. And that's how I discovered it. And I fell in love with it immediately. And these two kind of also have like a pairing where it's somebody is about to go down for a crime or they're incarcerated for a crime, and the people either in the jury room or in the newspaper room are not sold on that, and they want to get to the bottom of it and make sure that the right person is being punished for their crime. And I can't say enough about them. And if you haven't seen Call Northside 777, check it out. It's great.
When DVD was first really taking off and like studios started just putting out all of their catalog shit, Fox put out this whole series of like film noir. And I discovered a bunch of movies that way. I was blind buying them, but I'm like, this is a good way to learn about some of these movies. So that was how I saw Laura for the first time. An Edward G. Robinson movie that I can't think of. The Stranger? No. And Call Northside 777.
Yep.
And that movie was knocked me out. It was great.
Yep.
Since it's the last night before our week of Christmas, I wanted to go out with a bang. And I went with, I don't know what to call this.
I can't wait.
These are movies. They're both sort of crazy horror movies, genre movies that just change genres. Mm-hmm. So it's They're Playing with Fire.
Okay.
Followed by The Majorettes.
Is They're Playing with Fire the one with the saxophone?
No, that's The Devil's Honey.
Okay.
I put no Fulci on this calendar, which okay. I was like, how could I not be doing this? But I wasn't in the mood. They're Playing with Fire is Sybil Danning
okay.
playing the incredibly hot teacher of this high school now. Kid.
Okay.
And it's this dumb like sex comedy as it starts, and by the end it has become a slasher movie. And I want to say it was Rob Galluzzo from – it might have been still Killer POV that had first turned me on to this because mm-hmm. he was like, this movie's crazy. And it is, and I love it. I recently heard it talked about on 80s All Over, and they shit all over it, and it kind of bummed me out. Yeah. I love that show, and I love listening to them talk about movies, but sometimes they have very specific ideas about like what a good movie is and what a bad movie is, mm-hmm. and if it doesn't fit this certain criteria, they don't give it any credit. And yeah. I recognize that They're Playing with Fire is trash, but it's glorious trash,
yeah.
and it's like, how can you not love a movie that you just cannot predict, mm-hmm. you know? And The Majorettes is the same way. The Majorettes is from 87, based on a book and the screenplay written by John Russo, mm-hmm. who was at every con because, you know, he had his fingers on Night of the Living Dead, yeah. and has been riding that train ever since. And it begins as a slasher movie and ends as like Rambo First Blood Part 2. It's
good.
Bananas. Yeah. Nice. And both of those movies, again, the way that they start and end are completely different, and they're both wildly entertaining. And I just think it would be – I'm ending every one of these with like, I just think it would be fun. Like I keep saying that, and I'm
about.
Sorry.
That's
know.
That's what this
but,
is all about.
Yeah. Anyway.
Fun fact, New Beverly style. I met Rob Galluzzo at the New Beverly at a double feature of Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Ed Wood, which
oh, very
is one
nice.
Of the best
wow.
double features I've
That's
ever seen.
Quite a double feature.
And I was so nervous and starstruck. It was like when I met Nev Campbell, but it was Rob Galluzzo. I felt like such a fraud, and like I felt bad like bothering him, but I needed to tell him that I just loved the show and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's one thing that's neat about, I heard this is kind of like a thing like in LA, like people don't go up to like celebrities like in Chicago they don't like just
right.
fawn over people, so right. like when I've been to the New Beverly twice and I saw Gerard Carmichael he had a Kill Bill Volume 1 midnight show
cool.
and I saw Bobcat Goldthwait at the Tim Burton double feature
wow.
and I saw Rob Galluzzo and I was just like, I can talk to Rob Galluzzo. But when I got up there I was so nervous.
Speaking of Rob, yeah. I want to throw out, because he yeah. was on recently, I want to throw out a quick plug for one of the latest Dread Central Presents titles called Lasso,
okay.
which I blind bought just because I'm trying to support the label. It is a like a rodeo slasher movie, mm-hmm. and Sean Patrick Flannery is like the only star, and he is playing a guy with one arm. And I'm not saying it's great, but I so appreciate yeah. that when there's a gimmick to a horror movie, there's certain things that you want, right? This one is set around a rodeo. The killers are all these rodeo guys. Here's what you want. You want the filmmakers to sit down and say, okay, what's every single rodeo-related, like, death or, like, everything we could do that mm-hmm. ties into our gimmick? And that's exactly what they did. They just sat
like
down and
it.
Thought of every single thing they could.
It's the killer clowns from outer space.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it reminded me of. So I had fun with it. It is not a great horror movie, but I thought it was really fun for what it was. And I'd never seen a rodeo horror movie, so...
No, that sounds good.
Yeah, it was
That'd
fun.
Be good to double bill with, like, 8 seconds. So, since we're going into Christmas week, we got to put on Santa
Oh, this
hats.
Is exciting. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, hold on.
We're also joined
second.
By Santa Chucky, just so you, or Chucky Claus, I'm cool. sorry.
Here you
just
go.
So you know, putting on
Santa hat.
Santa hat. This doesn't even fit my giant skull, but...
These are my Dollar Tree bells.
They sound good.
Yeah. Okay.
I really do have a giant head, and this won't fit, but this is a child's hat.
All right, let me see if this works.
All right.
Oh, I do have a child's head. See me in Tom Holland's child's head. That sounds bad. Never mind. Don't see me at all. That's a bad title. Okay.
Christmas week.
Christmas week.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho. The thing that sucks about Christmas week is that there's only like 10 good Christmas movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I had trouble and I had to get creative and try some stuff out. So I wanted to avoid classics as much as I could, but most of these are like, yeah, anyways. So I wanted to do kind of the ones that I don't think people would show up to on the weekdays. And then on the weekend, I'm like, people are going to be together for Christmas. They're going to want to have like kind of the more, you know, bang for their buck. So, yeah. So Wednesday I did a family Christmas double feature of The Family Man.
Like it?
It's a movie that I kind of like.
Me too.
But I need to, I don't know. I'm compelled to rewatch it every once in a while.
Yeah.
And a movie that I'm fascinated by, but I don't think I like that much, but it's Edward Burns's The Fitzgerald Family Christmas.
I don't know that I ever saw the whole thing.
It's just, I don't know what it is, but I can't watch Woody Allen movies anymore, so now I transferred that fandom to Edward Burns because he's only been making weird Woody Allen type movies.
And like, as far as we know, never done anything super scummy.
Yeah. And I don't know. Just like, I find Edward Burns such a fascinating guy because he's just like, I don't know, I'm Edward Burns.
I shot this one out on Long Island.
Yeah. He's just like, Tribeca. Every movie has.
He keeps making movies, like small little indie movies. He doesn't have to. He could probably make a bunch of money as an actor.
No, he does the Ethan Hawke thing. He follows his heart.
He does it because he's a filmmaker.
And he's got this like rep company now where it's like that Mike Mulligan guy from Brothers McMullen and She's the One. Is that the name of the guy?
Mike McGlone.
Yeah. Or Mike Mulligan. Both of them.
And Hardball. That's like the only non-Ed Burns movie I've ever seen him in, I think.
Yeah. So he's got that guy. He's got this woman, Caitlin Fitzgerald. He's got Carrie Bushee. I mean, like, it's just like there's the same people are showing up in like Newlyweds and then the Fitzgerald Family Christmas.
Isn't Connie Britton in Fitzgerald
Family? Connie Britton's
and he discovered Connie Britton and Brothers McMullen.
Yeah, and it's just, it's fun and interesting and a good, like, dramedy. It's like the better version of The Family Stone.
Mm, not a fan of The Family Stone.
I will rewatch The Family Stone just because I have such a crush on Rachel McAdams in that movie.
Okay.
But other than that, that movie's a drag.
I like it.
All right.
Pretty solid. Night one of Christmas week for me is Noir Christmas. So it's a Blast of Silence and The Ice Harvest.
Nice.
Blast of Silence. Have you seen Blast of Silence?
I haven't heard of it.
Holy shit. Okay. It's 1961. It's basically the film noir version of Carnival of Souls, which is like they had no money.
My eyes got huge.
It's this black and white movie made for no money. They just went out with a camera and filmed a guy walking around New York. And there's barely a story. Mm-hmm. He's a hitman who's in from Cleveland there to take out a target at Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they fill it in with tons and tons of, instead of music, like Carnival of Souls, it's all this narration. And the narration is not done by the main actor, even though he's speaking as that character. And it's the most hard-boiled dialogue you've ever heard in your life. It is unbelievable.
Is it readily available?
Criterion put it out on DVD. There's no Blu-ray.
Okay.
But there is a Criterion DVD. I don't think it's available like to rent on streaming.
Okay.
So you'd probably have to check it out on the Criterion DVD, but it is well worth it. It is. And it's like 75 minutes.
Okay.
So I thought that would be a good warm up. And then I'm just such a big fan of The Ice Harvest.
Yeah, me too.
Harold Ramis just making a really nasty movie. Mm-hmm. Great. Oliver Platt performance.
Yes, he's wonderful in that movie.
Some of the last good Cusack. Mm-hmm. I really love that movie.
Yeah, I like it too. Okay, so Thursday, this is another one where I'm just like, some people might show up. So let's play something that I'll like at least.
I didn't take audience into account at all, by the way.
Mine is a 2002 holiday movie double feature of Eight Crazy Nights, which is a movie I'm mixed positive on. And I love Whitey and Eleanor. That's the two older people. I just think they're so funny.
I
love the voices that he does.
You mentioned Eight Crazy Nights, I just want to make sure that I bring up the fact that when we saw that movie opening Friday, my lovely wife Erica did cry, and I have never let her forget it.
Yeah. Was it at the part where he has the card at the end?
I couldn't even tell you. Okay. It was like near the end, and she was like sad about Whitey because she's the most empathetic person you've ever met.
Whitey
and
gets straight up bullied in
and just feels the pain of everyone, especially like a sad old man who's adorable and animated. And she cried.
Fun fact, the my Michael Rappaport impression is just Whitey from Eight Crazy Nights.
Now that you say it, I hear it.
Yep. And then I paired that with a movie that I saw for the first time this year, and I was stunned how funny I thought it was, and it's in a very specific, like, Grandma's Boy kind of way. It's Friday After Next.
Okay.
I had written off the Friday series because I didn't like Next Friday, But Friday After Next is like the Fast Five of Friday movies, because they bring a lot of people from the first two together. And I can't repeat any of the lines because it's not appropriate for a white person to say, but Clifton Powell plays this pimp, and it's like such a caricature of a pimp, but it's the funniest thing.
Okay.
And like he shows up only in dramas, so like it was such a surprise to see him as this character. He's this pimp named Pinky, and it's just so funny. And Mike Epps is even like really funny in that movie. And
I did the same thing where I think I wrote off, I didn't see the third one because I wasn't crazy about the second one.
Yeah, no, but the third one is it takes place in like basically like a strip mall, and that's kind of like the version of the neighborhood in this, and it's really just kind of stupid. Mm-hmm. It's just dumb humor, but it pairs perfectly with Eight Crazy Nights, and it's the type of thing where you laugh at it and you're embarrassed that you're laughing at, and that makes you laugh even more.
I like it.
Yep.
Night two of Christmas week for me is Asshole Kid Christmas. So it's Home Alone.
Yes.
And no, wait, I screwed this up. Sorry. I'm going to switch these because I just blew it. So I'll switch these around. Home Alone and Better Watch Out.
Okay.
From last year. Did you see Better Watch Out?
Yeah, I've seen it.
That kid's an
asshole. Oh, sorry. I'm thinking of Better Off Dead. No, I haven't seen Better Watch Out.
Better Watch Out is, I think, streaming on Shudder now. It's got two of the cast members from
The Visit.
The Visit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Is it the same brother-sister?
They're not brother-sister in this movie.
Okay.
The younger kid is playing like the friend of the main character instead of brother-sister, and she's the babysitter. I really like it. I appreciate its willingness to be nasty. And Home Alone is a classic. I mean, of course.
Yeah.
And I want to see people kind of get whiplash from sitting through Home Alone and then watching Better Watch Out.
That would be cool.
Yep.
You know what's weird? I find, like, so as I've gotten older, the funniest moment of Home Alone for me has changed
interesting.
A number of times.
Yeah.
And now the funniest moment of Home Alone is when John Candy and Catherine O'Hara are in the van at the end, and he tells her the story about leaving the kid and being catatonic and not talking. And then she goes, maybe we should just stop talking about this. He's like, I don't know, you brought it up. And then there's like an edit. That's my favorite part of Home Alone.
It feels improvised.
Yeah, it's like such a like a SCTV type of bit. So I love it. So Friday night, I broke out the action for this one. It's Rennie Christmas. It's Die Hard 2 and The Longest Goodnight.
Perfect.
Yeah.
We're the two biggest Die Hard 2 fans, I think. We are. Alone.
Yes, and The Longest Goodnight is pretty cool. I'm a fan of it.
I never love it as much as I want to. Yeah. I like it a lot, and I mean, Gina Davis, forget it. But I mean, that would be awesome.
Yeah, if
I'd be there in a heartbeat.
I would too. It's that's why it's my double feature.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Die Hard 2's got Dennis Franz.
Yeah.
Gives me my opportunity to get Dennis Franz in 35mm. The Longest Goodnight is something that I haven't seen it enough times where I know it real well, and I would love to see it again, especially in the theater.
Yeah. It's a good one. All right, so this is, are we Friday night?
Yes.
Okay, so this is my HBO Christmas. Each Christmas has a theme. So it's Trancers and To All a Good Night.
Okay.
Trancers, I wanted something sort of Full Moon or Empire, and this one's set at Christmas, and it's just a really cool movie. It's, you know, a ripoff of Blade Runner and time travel, but Tim Thomerson is so fun, and it's just such a cool movie. I really like it, and I would get to see it in a theater. And To All a Good Night is have you seen it? 1980 no. Christmas horror film, sort of a ripoff of Black Christmas, weirdly more comedic, noteworthy for being maybe the only movie ever directed by madman David Hess, best known as the killer Krug from The Last House on the Left and a couple other movies. I mean, he's just one of the creepiest people in all of cinema, and he's always like both terrifying but also so over the top that he's sort of funny.
Okay.
Maybe not in Last House on the Left, but in some other movies like House at the Edge of the Park, or what's the Hitchhike? Is that the one with Franco Nero? Anyway, he's just always a little bit big. And the movie is like that, where it's like sometimes it's supposed to be sort of a straightforward horror movie, and then it's like weirdly, broadly comic. Mm-hmm. It's got Jennifer Runyon, who was one of my earliest childhood crushes, because I fell in love with her at the beginning of Ghostbusters when she's being given that test.
Oh, yeah, she's cute.
Right. And then she was Gwendolyn Pierce on Charles in Charge, and I wanted to see Up the Creek so badly because she was in it, but I was a kid and my mom was like, you're not watching this rated R movie, and I couldn't be like, but Jennifer Runyon, mom. Anyway, so that's sort of my, because I didn't want to, I originally had Christmas Evil, and then when I was listening to the show, I was like, oh, they're showing that, I don't want to show something that they're showing at New Beverly, so I switched it out for To All a Good Night.
Very cool. Okay, so Saturday night, this is like for the families to come out. It's my Jimmy Stewart Christmas. It's a Wonderful Life, obviously. Classic. It's wonderful. And The Shop Around the Corner, which has a few Christmas scenes. It's not like straightforward Christmas movie, but it's charming.
Yeah.
It's all Get Out. And I almost did that with Miracle on 34th Street for a department store Christmas.
Oh, nice.
But I rewatched Miracle on 34th Street, and there's too much court stuff in it.
Okay.
I like it. I've seen it number of times, but for whatever reason, I was just like, oh, I just wish there wasn't so much court stuff. But The Shop Around the Corner it's just such a good conceit for like a romantic comedy.
Right.
And Jimmy Stewart is so engaging in it. Mm-hmm. And like the supporting characters in it are really entertaining. And I love that it's like, it takes place in, I forgot, Budapest.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's not Budapest. Right. At all. It's
might as well
like,
be New York.
Yeah. It's really good, and I think these two together would just be like, you'd be floating on your way out of the theater.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's just such old Hollywood charm.
Yeah. All right, my next night is Trans Christmas. It is Sean Baker's Tangerine, followed by John Waters' Female Trouble.
Okay. Very cool.
Both great movies.
Yeah. I like Tangerine. I haven't seen Female Trouble.
Female Trouble might be my favorite John Waters.
I don't think I've seen much more than Crybaby.
It's pretty nuts. But yeah, Female Trouble is really, really fun.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Sunday is the one where I really did a wild card.
All right.
This is a double feature that will only make sense to me.
Okay.
And that's why I will explain it.
The Doors and Stargate.
This is my Doors and Stargate. It's Eyes Wide Shut.
We have an exact match, but go ahead.
And the Santa Claus 2.
We depart.
Okay. It's called Sexy Christmas. And the Santa Claus 2 has one of
Is
the sexiest
what's her name?
Scenes.
Elizabeth?
Elizabeth Mitchell.
Okay.
Has one of the sexiest things I've ever seen in a movie.
I've never seen any of the Santa Claus movies.
One is fine, but it's very dated.
Okay.
Two, I think, is really kind of cute and has like, it's, I'm trying to explain, it's like the Addams Family Values
Got
thing.
Got
and
it.
Then three is just whatever. It's
that's
like
the one
with
Martin Short, right?
Yeah, that's like a Disney Channel movie. But two has this really neat kind of like older, like adult falling in love thing. And like Tim Allen and Elizabeth Mitchell are on this date, and it's like this, they kind of like each other, but they kind of don't like each other. And then like throughout the evening, they grow to really get into each other and dig each other. And then he does this thing where it's like a gesture where he's able to kind of manifest this present that she wanted when she was a little girl, and she kind of warms up to him and everything. And then they go back to her place. And it's a PG movie, but mm-hmm. she does some things that aren't like overtly sexual or anything like that. But she does things where it's like, it's so like winter cozy and stuff. And they're in like cozy type clothes
call that
and stuff.
Hygge.
Yeah. And then she shuts the curtains, and then she does this couch roll where she rolls from behind the couch onto the couch. And then she's just kind of sitting there, and she's kind of like laying and stuff. And then she's just like, and then, like, Tim Allen is, like, looking at her and stuff, and they're kind of just like, oh, they're giving each other that look where I'm just like, they're gonna bone.
Yeah.
Like, they're gonna bone. And it's like the sneakily sexy, like, Ant-Man and the Wasp 2018
Got it.
Thing.
Got it.
And the movie, I think, is just charming.
Okay.
But it's Sexy Christmas.
All right.
And also, I feel
like
if you watch Eyes Wide Shut, you're gonna be rock hard by the end of it. So, like, and unfulfilled. So, like, you're going to agree with me by the end of Santa Claus 2. You were like, this is a hot movie.
Do I need to have seen Santa Claus 1 to watch Santa Claus 2?
It helps.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe I'll try to check them both out this December. I don't know. I got a lot of stuff to watch. I can't promise anything. Yeah. Yeah. My night is 99 Christmas, yeah. So it's Eyes Wide Shut and Go.
Nice.
Which is a movie set at Christmas, barely about Christmas.
Yeah.
I guess Katie Holmes gives that monologue about Christmas at the opening of the film.
And Oliphant's wearing the Santa hat.
Right. And yeah. Sarah Polley just walks in and steals that movie. But
it's a good movie.
Yep.
It's fun.
Yep.
I got on Christmas Eve, nobody's going to be there because everybody's with their family. So I might as well just play something that nobody's going to watch anyway.
Oh, we went a different way.
Okay. So I did two 2000s Christmas that take place in Chicago.
Okay.
Nothing Like the Holidays, which I think is kind of underrated. I
haven't seen it.
It's not great. Okay. It's like, it's got a good Leguizamo. It's got my girl Melanie Diaz in it.
Oh, yeah.
It's got Alfred Molina. All like very charming. Mm-hmm. Good Humboldt Park Christmas movie. And Happy Christmas with Anna Kendrick and a great performance by Melanie Linsky. It's I wonder what happened to the mumblecore era, because it kind of just was there in the era, and then it just kind of stopped a few years ago, and it just happened very abruptly, I feel like.
And Jill Swanberg kind of seems to have stopped making movies a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. But I really like it, and it's for Rob, you know, it's got Anna Kendrick in it.
Oh, right, yeah.
So Chicago Christmas.
Chicago Christmas. Christmas Eve, I thought, yeah, maybe people will still come out. And since it's Christmas Eve, I want them to be happy. I don't want to show them anything down. So I went with just two classics. The first is The Thin Man, which is just one of the greatest movies ever made, followed by Holiday Affair from 1949, which is a movie I think that got on my radar again because of Pure Cinema. I want to say it was on one of their Blu-ray picks shows, one of their Patreon bonuses. It's Robert Mitchum and Janet Leigh. Just this great little romantic, it's not even a romantic comedy. Like, he works in a department store and she comes in as like a secret shopper, and they don't like each other at first, and then they get to know each other, and it's very sweet, and I'm just not used to seeing Robert Mitchum in that mode.
Yeah, sounds good.
If you have Turner Classic Movies, it's going to be on sometime this month. I was going through their schedule, and I know they're showing it, so set your DVRs for Holiday Affair.
I will.
It's very charming.
Okay, and
Christmas Day!
Christmas Day! Merry Christmas, everybody!
Merry Christmas!
Christmas Day, that's the time where I feel like some people might be burnt out on Christmas, especially by the evening, but they still might want kind of a little bit of Christmas, so these are sort of like a good bridge for that. So I did Just Friends.
Good one.
And The Ice Harvest.
Oh, okay. Another match.
So
saw those movies on the same day.
What?
In 2005. I did a double feature of those two movies.
Look at you, Lou Reed. What a perfect day.
It was a really good day at the movies.
Yeah.
And I had weirdly, like, no expectations for both, because I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah. Well, we talked about The Ice Harvest already, and then Just Friends is just such a zany, fun comedy where everybody is playing it like maniacs, and it works.
And some really, I mean, Anna Kendrick, what's her name?
Amy Smart.
No.
Anna Faris.
Anna Faris. God, I couldn't come up with it. It's like, that is such an inspired comic performance.
Love when Christopher Marquette is like, you are so hot. And she's like, I know.
Erica and I still, to this day, when one of us says, I know, we'll say, I know. Still to this day.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
It's really fun.
All right.
Christmas Day, I figure this was the day where I was like, nobody's going to be here. So I programmed Stupid Christmas. Mm-hmm. It is Reindeer Games and Invasion USA. Yeah. Just the two most brainless Christmas action movies you can think of.
Yeah.
But wow, what a kick-ass night at the movies.
That sounds good. Yeah. What pie was he eating? Pecan pie?
Oh, yeah.
He's probably totally going to go see the mule.
His name is Rudy, by the way.
Is Rudy?
Rudy. You know, like Rudolph.
Oh, my goodness.
That movie's amazing.
It's got Sinise villain.
Aaron Kruger.
Villain.
I mean, look at the bad guys.
Clarence Williams III's in it.
Right?
Who is it?
Trejo, Donald Logue.
Yeah.
Charlize Theron. Yeah. I mean, it is. And Frankenheimer, like, directs the shit out of it, even though he's like, I know it's garbage. Yeah. Listen, this is what they hired me for. So I'm going to direct it as best I can.
He's just like, I did Dr. Moreau. I got no shame. Let's bring it.
So, he had PTSD, I think, from that movie.
Yeah, seriously. Okay. So, like, the rest of the way, for the most part, I was
Christmas,
like,
hats off.
Christmas hats off. Thank you. I was getting warm. So,
because of Sexy Christmas.
Oh, Elizabeth Mitchell. Oh, my goodness. But only in the Santa Claus 2. So, like, the rest of the year, or the rest of the month, I was like, okay, well, people are going to be off work. They're going to want to see, like, fun stuff. So I tried to avoid.
I like it.
I tried to avoid heavy stuff if I could.
I almost did. No, I take it back.
I have one that's kind of heavier. But anyways, so the 26th, I was just like, okay, let's do kind of like another send them out floating double feature. So I did a 2 for Audrey Hepburn.
Very nice.
Another person that I discovered through rep, Roman Holiday, which is one of the best debuts of all time. It's just a movie where you're like, that's a star, and I will watch her in anything. And Sabrina, which
I've never seen the original Sabrina.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's a beautiful movie.
Sadly, I've only seen the Harrison Ford version.
I need to see the Harrison Ford version.
Do you?
I kind of want to. I don't know.
The hook for that movie when it came out was like, oh, Greg Kinnear is acting now?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Dear God's Greg Kinnear.
Marshall.
Yeah.
He hasn't been delivering the mail for that long.
Dear God, we'll book it together. You're already showing two of my... It's a two... It's a 3 for 2. Triple feature it. So... Sorry, I got marshaled. So then...
We are Marshall.
Yeah, we are Marshall. Oh, boy. Yeah, and then Sabrina is just... It's just a charming, classic Billy Wilder romantic comedy. William Holden is great. Audrey Hepburn is just like effervescent in that movie. I'm not always the biggest Bogart fan.
Sure.
I like him in this, and I like him in The Lonely Place, or In a Lonely Place. Yeah. And he's kind of got that weird, like, he's too old for her thing going on, for sure. Yeah. But, I mean, when he's not with her, like, being romantic, he's still good. So, figure that it's a good, nice end of year type of double feature.
I like it. I have no idea why I programmed this double feature. It's the soap opera double feature, so it's All That Heaven Allows and Soap Dish.
I knew you were going to do Soap Dish.
How did you know I would do Soap Dish?
Because it was your soap opera double feature.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. So, since I said it's a soap opera double feature, not like I knew at some point Soap Dish was going to be on this goddamn calendar.
No. I know you're a fan, though. Yeah.
I am. I just think it's like one of the most underrated comedies of the 90s. Yeah. I think the cast is insane in that movie. Mm-hmm. I think Kevin Kline gives a performance for the ages. I think Sally Field is hilarious and so rarely allowed to be hilarious. I just think everyone is killing it in that movie. And All That Heaven Allows, I think this was born out of, like, I've never seen a Douglas Sirk movie projected on the big screen, and I was trying to think of, like, what would be, like, the most gorgeous kind of Technicolor, you know, if I'm programming movies on 35, like, what do I want to show? And Douglas Sirk would be up there, so I thought that would be a cool night at the movies.
Yeah, I have a blind spot with Douglas Sirk movies. I need to watch some of those. I don't know if I've ever seen one. I'm trying to think.
You should come on December 26th. Skip your own double feature. Come on over.
I think I have PTO that day. It can happen. The 27th, I scheduled 2 kind of small gems that one's kind of heavier, one's just very fun and inspirational. But I love dancing in real life and in movies. And the best... I used to do ballroom dance, and my favorite ballroom dance movie ever is the Japanese version of Shall We Dance from 1987.
I've seen the remake.
It's great. It's so interesting from a cultural perspective because dance is seen as sort of like a trifle and it's not something that like an adult male should be doing. And it's all about the need for kind of an artistic expression. Mm-hmm. And, he's like hiding it and stuff, and it becomes this sort of thing that's even more romantic to him because he has to hide it. But then, like, his wife is kind of hurt that she's not brought into it, and she hires, like, it's cute. It's like she hires, like, a private investigator to find out because she thinks she's having an affair. And then the guy's just like, no, he's a really good ballroom dancer and stuff. And it's just, like, about a love of dance and a love of doing what you want to do, damn what other people think. And then I paired that with another movie where kind of dance is a big part of this person's life, and it's Fish Tank. It's a very heavy drama.
Yeah, it is.
It's a very good movie, though. It's kind of reminiscent of those, like, 60s new wave movies in a lot of ways. But it breaks my heart that Katie Jarvis didn't have, like, a big career after this.
Yeah, that was one of those.
So
has
great.
She done anything else?
I don't think so. Uh-oh. I think she became a mom and sort of, like...
This is Andrea Arnold, right?
Yeah.
And she did... That movie that I didn't love was Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, American Honey.
Yeah,
this is better.
Yeah,
yeah. But yeah, Michael Fassbender at the beginning of his career, he's like immediately you're just like, oh, he's going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's and this is like hip hop dance and stuff, but it's you know, about how that's her escape. Like, she is a mess everywhere else, but there's, like, these little pockets of happiness for her, and one of them is to go into this abandoned, you know, housing project apartment and just, like, blare her music and, like, dance to it and stuff like that. And it's also kind of how people can bastardize that dream for you.
Yeah.
And I just love it. It's a great movie.
It didn't occur to me when I was watching it because I had so much Larry Clark on the brain, but mm-hmm. I feel like Fish Tank is the movie that Jonah Hill was trying to make with mid-90s.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah. They're in such a different class that I...
Well, 100%, but I think...
I like almost can't even fathom.
I feel like that's what he was shooting
yeah.
for.
Sure, yeah.
My December 27th, I did Rock Band Night, double feature of the Ramones in Rock and Roll High School, mm-hmm. crowd pleaser, such a blast, followed by The Monkees in Head, which wow. is a movie that I love, and because I just grew up loving The Monkees, yeah. obsessing over The Monkees, and it was such a hard movie to see for such a long time. Yeah. It was not readily available. TNT showed it once at like 2 a.m. Yeah. I just ran a VHS tape all night so I could get it, and I would just watch it over and over again, fast forward through the commercials. And then a VHS came out, and then later a DVD, and now there's a Criterion Blu-ray of Head, which just
yeah.
is the most delightful thing. And it's a terrific, insane, subversive movie that the more you know about the Monkees, the better it is because of the ways that that movie fucks with their image. It is a movie designed to destroy the Monkees, mm-hmm. written by Jack Nicholson, by mm-hmm. the way. Did you watch it here?
I did. That's I didn't what I thought. Know. It was, even though you like prepared me for it, I wasn't ready for it. Like I yeah. needed to see it in order to like really kind of get it. So I would like to see it again. But the Monkees were like, I liked it in the spirit of the reason why they were put together. So like the fact that they
right.
were so subverting
right.
that
right.
really kind of threw me off. And now that I know that that's what's happening, I would.
And it's such a movie it. Of its time. I've never seen it, you know, theatrically. I think it would be yeah. awesome in a theater.
Yeah. Very, very cool.
Yep.
Okay.
Four more.
Wow, this seems like a short show. The
20. It is not.
What are we at? Like 2 hours?
Just over.
Oh, goody for us. So the 28th, we have a match on here.
Oh.
This is 1934 classic romantic comedies. I have It Happened One Night
nice.
And The Thin Man.
Very nice.
You're going to feel great after watching both of those movies. Clark Gable is an actor that I really dig. I like him in Manhattan Melodrama, and I liked Gone with the Wind. And
Manhattan Melodrama, I'm just like, he's William Powell's in that movie. Nobody's fucking watching Clark Gable.
I don't know. But I think he's so I think he's just really funny in It Happened One Night. And he looks like my grandpa.
Oh,
like,
well, there you go.
My grandpa looked like, when I see old photos of my grandpa, I'm just like, he used to tell people that he thought he looked like Clark Gable, and people used to be like, whatever. And then, like, I would see pictures, I'm just like, I was able to tell him once before he passed away, I'm like, I agree with you, you did look like Clark Gable.
Oh, that's
he was
great.
Just like, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And The Thin Man is just one of the greatest things,
it's,
like, you could
I
ever
mean,
watch.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I love that you also love William Powell as much as
oh,
I
my
do.
God.
So great. Yeah. It's just, I will do this double feature.
Every time I revisit it, I'm amazed at how long it takes Nick and Nora to show up in the movie.
Yeah.
And then when they do, you're just like, oh, yes. Yeah. I don't know that I like any of the sequels nearly as much. I like
okay.
the second one and Jimmy Stewart. Yeah. And like, once the kid shows up, it's almost always like, kids. I'm not saying kids ruin things because I'm not blaming that on my own kids. I'm saying sometimes in movie series,
they hardly improve things.
Right. Or on TV shows. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
In the spirit of my Ken Wall double feature for Night 28, I did a Lori Loughlin double feature.
I'm there.
Of The Night Before.
Okay.
And Secret Admirer.
I thought you were going to go rad for
no,
something.
No. Two 80s sort of romantic comedies. The Night Before, underseen, great comedy directed by Tom Eberhardt of mm-hmm. Night of the Comet fame. Keanu Reeves loses his prom date. He gets the most popular girl in school to go out to prom with him, and then loses her to a pimp during mm-hmm. a blackout, and spends sort of like after hours the rest of the night trying to get her back. And Secret Admirer is a movie where somehow both Kelly Preston, 80s Kelly Preston, and Lori Loughlin are in love with fucking C. Thomas Howell.
It's not fair.
But again, an amazing cast that goes so deep. Corey Haim, Fred Ward, Dee Wallace, Casey Jamasco shows up. Mm. It's not a great movie, but it is one that I find very, very fun.
I need to watch both of those. I've never seen either of them.
Oh, this would be a good double feature.
I would like it.
The Keanu Reeves comic performance in The Night Before is something.
Sweet. I'm into it. What year was that from?
87, maybe? Okay. 86, 87? Movie? No.
Okay.
He had done a couple things. Like, I think Youngblood came before that. Okay. He has, like, one scene in Youngblood. It might have been one of his first leads.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The 29th, I have, it's like cooking/restaurant night, and I did Big Night and Ratatouille.
Oh, very nice.
And they're just...
First animated movie. What's with us?
Yeah. Not the last.
Oh, okay.
But I got one more. But Big Night is... I remember I watched it. It was something that, like, I know Siskel and Ebert really liked, and it was on my radar, but I just never got around to it. And then JB wrote something great about it. And he's absolutely right that I watched it, like, right after I read that article when it came out. And it's just such a great, specific, cultural... just celebration and also just funny. And I love just like everything is kind of wrapped around this impressing the food critic plot. Mm-hmm. I just love it. And then Ratatouille is my favorite Pixar movie.
Yeah.
And I love it. What it says about, I remember sometimes I love catching myself being like, oh, that's what the lesson of this movie is. Because sometimes it's like, well, yeah, dummy. Everybody gets it. But I remember when I watched that movie just being blown away by the, like, oh, it's not anybody can cook. It's anybody can cook. Like, it doesn't matter who you are or what you are. Like, you can cook. It doesn't mean everybody's talented.
Right.
And I know that's been criticized by detractors of Brad Bird, where they're just like, you know, he only, like, celebrates people who are remarkable at things and stuff like that. But, like, there's something to be said about that. Like, if you... it's cool to admire the genius of the Beatles. Like, it's fine to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what makes things magical in life. Like, is to be so impressed by, like, a person's unique talent at something. And I think Ratatouille gets it, and it's, like, just a beautifully animated, romantic, fun. I love it.
Do you know much about the production of that movie?
Know a little bit about
okay.
it.
Okay. I've plugged this show before, I know, to you and on this podcast before, but the Blank Check podcast did a series on Brad Bird, and the Ratatouille episode is really interesting because the background information that they provide about the making of that movie makes you realize that it is a miracle.
Yeah.
Like, what that movie could have or should have been and
like
what
a good
it became
situation where it's just kind of
it was this movie called Rats, and it was like they fired everybody and cranked it out in a very short amount of time, and it's just like, man, it is so good for what they had to do. It's really interesting. December 29th, movie I just have never seen screen theatrically, really wanted to, a movie I love. This is Cops and Robbers Night. So it's To Live and Die in L.A.
Yes.
Which I love.
Great movie.
And I just could not figure out what to pair it with.
Cops and Robbersons?
Maybe. I was like, these movies are too long and maybe too similar. I thought about Collateral. I ended up going with the Chicago version that's about robbers, not cops, and it's Michael Mann's Thief.
Nice.
Which is also an amazing movie.
Yeah.
So
Friedkin and Mann in the same
movie. Yeah, and I mean, they're both like over 2 hours and both tonally kind of similar, but I mean, they're both just such fucking home runs what a night that would be.
That would be really, really good.
Yeah.
I like that. It's so super macho.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, the 30th, this is my next animated pick.
Okay.
It's my first favorite movie ever. It's Pinocchio. And Pinocchio is just, it's beautiful. Yep. It's like top three Disney animated movies with Dumbo and 101 Dalmatians for me. I had versions of this list with all of those movies as different things, but I'm just like, you know what? Pinocchio is the thing. And I can't say enough about it. It's just Disney magic. And I was like, what do I pair it with? I had trouble thinking of it because I didn't want to do two Disneys necessarily. I didn't want to do, like, there's no other good Pinocchio movie. It would be a stretch to do. Like, I'm not wasting a slot on The Adventures of Pinocchio, even though I kind of like it. So I was like, well, he's a liar. So let's pair it with Shattered Glass. So it's Liar's Night.
I love it.
Shattered Glass is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It made me, like, a huge fan of Billy Ray, who ended up doing Breach after that.
Which is
really good.
Yeah, like, really underrated.
Yeah. And then it's... outside of Little Italy, it's Hayden Christensen's best performance. Peter Sarsgaard's great in it. It's got Melanie Lynskey. It's got Chloe Sevigny. It's just such a fascinating story. And I love that it's really about something that's kind of universal. It's just like, oh, he was charming, so we allowed him to just completely bastardize our industry. Mm-hmm. And like the personal feelings involved with it, of how like they enabled it to happen. And then finally, this knight in shining armor, this editor of the New Republic, says, no, everything about what we do is at stake. Mm-hmm. If we condone this, you need to come down on this guy like as hard as fucking possible, because that's what we do.
Right.
And otherwise you should be run out of the industry. And I love the moral righteousness of that movie, because he's so right.
Yeah.
And it's a movie that kind of came and went, and I would love to pair it with Pinocchio.
That is an inspired double feature.
Thank you.
Love it. Not sure why I went with this for December 30th. Really wanted to screen The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, because it's a Billy Wilder movie that I think is underrated and that I would like to see screened theatrically. I thought, well, let me go with another movie that's about deconstructing the sort of Sherlock Holmes story. Didn't do this on purpose, but Tom Eberhardt makes his second showing in 3 days.
Nice.
And that is Without a Clue, with Michael Caine and Ben Kingsley.
Okay.
Which
I've heard good things about that.
Suggests that Watson was actually the brains behind it, and that Sherlock Holmes was actually a bumbling idiot, but just sort of the face of the operation. It's basically Remington Steele, yeah. but in the Sherlock Holmes universe. And it's good. It's fun. I like both of those movies. I think they would play well together.
Very nice. Are you interested at all in that Holmes and Watson
movie? I'll see it.
Yeah. I feel like that could
be as much as I could say.
Good.
That comes out like
Christmas Day.
Like in a few weeks.
Yeah.
I have not even seen the trailer.
Yeah, it played before Instant Family.
So. Okay. That explains it.
He has moments. and then New Year's Eve, I went back and forth on this one because it's
tough one.
It's a tough one. You want to have just the right thing. And then I eventually like got rid of the, oh, it needs to tie in with New Year's Eve. I just want people just to have fun and enjoy themselves and see two movies that will make them feel good. So I did New Year's Eve with Abe Vigoda, Look Who's Talking,
nice,
and Joe Versus the Volcano.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Look Who's Talking gets left out of the conversation. It's always Travolta's comeback was with Pulp Fiction. But Look Who's Talking was a big hit, and he's fucking amazing.
He really
is. He's really, really funny.
He really is.
And that movie is, because it's Amy Heckerling, it's so much better than it has any right
to be. It should be this idiotic talking baby movie, and it's so smart.
But it's so smart.
Yeah.
Travolta and Kirstie Alley are adorable together.
Yeah.
I found out recently that the George Segal character is supposed to be Harold Ramis.
Really?
And Kirstie Alley is supposed to be Amy Heckerling.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
Yeah. And I just, that took a like a whole new kind of
wow
angle to it. But I love the movie. It's something I grew up with. I rewatched the trailer for it today, and it's weird because at the end of the trailer, it's the poster, but it's a baby coming out of an egg.
Oh, boy.
And I wondered, I'm like, do they know that babies come out of eggs?
Right now, I'm just wondering if I own Look Who's Talking because I want to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. I bought it at like the used bookstore.
Nice.
It was a good purchase. and then I mean, you and I just adore Joe Versus the Volcano, and that's the type of movie where I feel like, the way I always interpret New Year's Eve is it's a moment of like renewal and going into the new year with the best intentions. And what better than Joe Banks?
That's a great movie to end on.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
My New Year's Eve, I wanted to go with something, I guess, New Year's Eve themed. And in a moment of candor, I will say my immediate impulse was to go with like an apocalyptic double feature, right? So I was going to do like Miracle Mile and Southland Tales because I'm like, what's New Year's Eve? Ha ha, fuck it. It's the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? That's, I don't know. That kind of thinking has gotten me where I am, right? So I was like, let me push it another way and let me not be a fucking cynical asshole. So I went with two movies in which New Year's Eve factors in, but they are not necessarily about New Year's Eve. The Coen Brothers, The Hudsucker Proxy, which is their sort of screwball comedy tribute that I think is really fun and underrated. And then for the last movie of the year, again, talking to Eric, I said, okay, we're running a repertory theater. What movie do we want to end the year on? What's, you know, this movie that means so much to us and features New Year's Eve? And it's Boogie Nights. So kind of dark, but certainly ends on a hopeful note. Yep. And I like that after programming 31 days of movies, we're ending on just the shot of a giant dick. And ELO, you know, plays and we go out into the street and it's midnight and we kiss our loved ones and we feel good about the world.
I like it.
Yeah.
And it's got, you got Thomas Jane on New Year's Eve.
Oh, that's right.
You've got...
that's what we came here to motherfucking do, and that's what we're going to motherfucking do.
You got Mark Wahlberg finding an instant family. It took a while.
I got all these kids, bro.
Yeah. No, I love Boogie Nights. It's
one of the best movies ever made.
It really is, yeah.
But so is Joe versus the Volcano, so...
Yeah. No, that's cool, and I'm happy to hear that you went into the more positive route, because... cynicism's easy, and sometimes it's tougher and braver and better for us to try, even to fake it.
Yep.
To fake positive.
Right.
And I'm glad that you're doing that.
No, thank you. I'm trying every day. Yeah. This was super fun. Thank you for having this awesome idea.
Yeah.
I have so many movies I feel like watching right now.
Yeah, me too. I mean, like, I need to listen back to our show just to,
just write, stuff down. I know.
I mean, like, I'll post my list in the comments.
Oh, that's a great idea.
That way people
also
can
post
like
my list. Please.
Fair enough. But also thanks to the Pure Cinema Podcast.
Absolutely,
for,
yeah.
You know, enabling this idea. And thank you to the New Beverly Theater, even though I probably can only go there once every 2 years. You are one of my two favorite theaters.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, just the programming there is just remarkable. And it's something that I've wanted to get back into, is just to kind of be a better student mm-hmm. of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of my favorite things was discovering movies by following along with the Music Box rep schedule for mm-hmm. like a number of years in my 20s. And I'd like to do that again.
So. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you. I'm sure we'll end up doing this again.
Yeah.
Because it was stressful, but super fun.
Yeah.
Thank you guys very much for listening. Remember, as always, you can go to fthismovie.com every day for stuff. Follow us on Twitter at fthismovie. We're on Facebook. Listen to us on Stitcher, iTunes, maybe Spotify. I don't know. Or you can even email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Next week, Mike Pomero returns for a very special episode. And then in 2 weeks, Adam, you're back for our annual holiday episode.
You guys are going to not even have to leave the couch for this one.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.